Welcome to the first Dresden Files podcast, I guess? What are we calling this?
That was a lot of passion.
It's a special episode.
Special edition of Crippled System. The Dresden Files.
One through five.
The review episode. Of three. It could be four. We could do 1 through 5, then we could do 6 through 10, then we could do 11 through 15, then we could all marathon the series and talk about that.
Oh, dear God.
The series is only like 10 episodes or something. It was one season.
I really enjoyed the series.
It's not bad. It's actually really solid.
Our goal is to cover the first 5 books and not spoil things beyond 5.
Correct.
We might accidentally, I'm sure, spit out something or imply something accidentally just by the nature of us have read the books multiple times.
Correct.
But our goal is just to discuss
Some
the first
of us
5.
Have only listened to summaries of book 5.
Correct. So yeah. Well, Kate read 4. She's read 4-ish.
Yes.
And understands 5.
Yes. I have read all 15, but I have just started. I did not get to reread all of the first 5. So I will be the rustiest of the veterans because I am midway through book 2 currently.
I reread the first 10 last year, and I reread the first couple recently.
Yeah, I reread the first 10 last year, and I reread the first 4 recently. Yeah. So 5 is going to be the one where we're most likely to accidentally spoil something from a future book, because we're going to be remembering what we read a while ago. So we've got me, Jeremy, Valiant 418. Hooray.
My name is Katie, Bad Horse.
My name is Nathan.
My name is Brian.
And he's going to talk in that voice the whole time.
No.
It's going to be awesome.
Boy.
It's quality entertainment.
So, if someone doesn't know anything about the Dresden Files, Brian, how would you describe the Dresden Files?
I would say it is a detective book. It's one of those pulp fiction. Or not, well, pulp, is it? No, not pulp.
Well, there's pulp fiction, but without the capital P and F.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, no, it's a detective story. It just happens to be in Chicago. It just happens to be that, you know, it's in a modern world where... like vampires exist.
Yeah. Detective noir with magic.
Wizards, Sasquatches, yeah. Loch Ness monsters, all that shit.
Fairies.
Before we got into the books, I thought it'd be cool if you each said, like, what got us to read the Dresden books? Like, what? Why did we actually read these books?
Because Nathan's going to rage when he hears why I read them. It's going to be awesome.
Well, let's have Nathan go first.
Okay.
Why did you read?
Brian and Jim told me I had to.
All right.
It's fair.
I always forget who I tell. That's fair enough.
Yeah. I can mention this with books 1. I'll save this for books 1 and 2. But Brian and Jim told me I had to is the summary.
All right. Fair enough.
When I got into them, I had some people at my job where all of us read a bunch of books. And they kept saying, you know, we passed all these authors around. And they kept saying, read the Dresden. I'm like, well, I'm not generally a modern world fantasy kind of person. That's not the kind of thing I would jump into. And I was reading the Glenn Cook books, or they're called the Garrett Files, and it's kind of a medieval-themed detective story. But the big difference in those books is there's like 12 of them, but like after I've read 9 of them, and the characters never developed. So I just had this like envision that if it's a detective story, it's just going to be the same thing over and over again.
Right, it's just going to be Monster of the Week, except, you know, week is,
but after,
you know,
like
book
12 and... books, and I had some more friends. I just had more and more friends keep saying, hey, the Dresden books are fun. And I'm like, you know what, these guys end up, I have a co-worker's had all the books. I'm like, fine, just borrow me a few of them, and I'll start off. And that's kind of what sucked me into the nonsense.
Loan. Yeah. Loan you a few of them.
Loan, nope, they borrowed.
Yes.
I watched this show that was really good, and I really enjoyed it. Based on the Dresden Files,
yeah.
That I've been told is a terrible show, but I really enjoyed it.
It's not terrible.
It is.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you were the one that said you didn't like it.
It is a horrible adaptation, but
of
a good
show.
Like,
yes.
That's the thing. I mean, it's kind of like the movie V for Vendetta. I actually really like that movie. Yeah. It is an absolute shit-piled trash heap adaptation of the graphic novel V for Vendetta, but I enjoy the film, you know, and so
on its own merits.
You have to be able to see that sometimes an adaptation has to be different because of the genre it's in, and for what it is, like if I had not read the books or being able to mentally compartmentalize and pretend that they're not related to the books, just watching this show called The Dresden Files, it's a good show.
It is a good show. And it brings a lot of the main characters in, and it's just like 12 episodes, but it pulls stuff from the first couple of books. Yeah. They do a pretty good job. Anyway, that got me interested. And while I mentioned, I think, to Brian that I'd watched the show and it was really cool, he was like, oh, you should read the books. And I was like, well, maybe. He's like, no, read them right now. Stop whatever you're doing. Go read the books. I said, okay.
Jeremy insisted on reading the first one to me, and then he kept falling asleep, so then he was like, oh, we'll listen to the books on tape. And then he had to tell me how the second book ended, because it got really tense, and I didn't want to listen to the rest of it. And then I read book 3 and part of book 4.
Well, the books on tape are done by James Marsters.
I know.
All but one.
Spike from... Buffy and Angel.
I'm still annoyed he didn't do one of them. Like
I forget which one he didn't do, but there's one he didn't do.
Yeah, like a contract problem or something.
Then pay him and have him redo it.
Yeah, like, that's my suggestion.
Yeah, because he does an amazing job with them, quite frankly.
It wasn't that it was a bad read. It was just that it gets really tense and...
Yeah, there's some crazy shit that goes on in that book.
Book two?
Book two,
yeah.
The car on the freeway scene. Yeah. She was like, I'm out. I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
So a general thing...
Never mind. I know. We're going to talk about the book.
Well, we talk about it, they get tense. One thing that Dresden does well, and when I reread the books recently, I noticed that his first couple books weren't quite like this. They were kind of, but later on, it's nonstop. He ends the chapter in such a way that you have to read the next chapter.
Cannot stop.
Yeah. It's not necessarily a cliffhanger, but there's always something really exciting that ends the chapter. So he just books end. So every chapter ends and starts amazingly. So you're always pulling in. The first few books don't quite follow that same pattern.
Right.
That's an experienced writer thing because read not the same genres as you guys, but I read quite a few books and like some of them, like it's like I get to the end of the chapter, thank God, and then some of them it's like, oh yeah, I got to keep reading.
Yeah. Like I can physically put down books 1 and 2. I'm physically capable of that action. Once I start reading books 3 and on, I'm committed for that book.
John Acker basically read though. Like I think he was reading because he's catching up. Book 9. He said he sat down once, read the first read about 10%, and then sat down again and read the 90%.
The other 90%.
Oh, yeah. And there are those ones they'd come out and you'd read them. I'd be up till 3 a.m. right? Because I mean I'd read and I'm like, well, you know, whatever. I'm committed at this point. I'm not gonna stop. Yeah. Like this chapter just ended with like him on fire rocketing down an elevator shaft with people. Like I have to read the next chapter.
I have to find out what happens.
I think that one of the definitions of a good book is when it ends, you're very disappointed that it ended because you wanted to keep going. Like, even if everything was resolved and, like, whatever, it doesn't matter what the ending actually was.
You just want to keep reading it.
You just want to keep being part of those characters' lives.
And he does a good job of coming out with a book every year to year and a half.
Yes, he is very dependable. As opposed to another author who should remain nameless. Yep. He is very good about that.
Martin?
Yes.
Okay. Nice, just double checking.
Nicely nameless,
though. Crack the code.
Martin Schwartz Johnson.
Hornacek.
Martin Hornacek.
To be fair, didn't it take him like forever between all of his books anyway? It's just that nobody noticed until he got...
No,
it was like the first book, and then a year later the second, and then like a year later the third, and then like it just exploded.
Yeah.
It took him like 3 years to release the first 3 books, and it took him 15 years to release the next book and a half.
Yeah. That's true.
And I'm 100% certain, now we're changing topics, but I'm 100% certain that it's just because he can't handle Marine.
Yeah, he's not sure what to
do. He doesn't know how to solve Marine. He even refers to it as the Marine. Yeah,
Dresden's always like, what's going on there? I'm so confused.
Yeah, sorry, Dresden, not Martin. Fuck Martin.
Anyway.
So he said Dresden is a modern-day detective series. Mm-hmm. And also, too, when I didn't read it, modern-day shit today is you have a lot of fucking shit like Twilight, and you have sparkly vampires, you have werewolves who are friendly. You have all these like
genres. They're all the same. It's just one book.
No, but there's a lot. But those books spawned a lot. I mean, there's a lot of book series that exist, and a lot of movies that exist that have these sparkly-type vampires.
Well, name monsters. Name some of your favorite book series.
Dracula?
No. Come on. You're the 12-year-old girl on the podcast.
Divergent.
There's the Divergent ones. You like
There's
those
no
Hunger Games.
In Divergent. Hunger Games is great. Also no vampires.
That you know of.
But if you go anywhere, there's a genre of things that have been created since this happened.
Yes. And it's terrible. And it's, frankly, it's ruining, like, you go back and you read Dracula. Vampires are not friendly. You go read Interview with a Vampire. This is not a friendly... happy-go-lucky, save you from your high school drama vampire.
In both of those books, though, they're really good at fucking you with their penis and sex.
Well, that's true. But, okay, I guess
but that's
my
erotic,
is,
not romantic.
Other than Twilight, like what books or what genres are you talking
Here's
about?
Here's the thing. If I could name all those movies, I'd put a bullet in my head. But I know they exist. I've seen the commercials and the trailers. I'm like, I'm out. I mean, there's just a lot of these things. I mean, I could do the research, but I would bleed from the eyes.
Because, like, I can't think of any. Like, even, like, True Blood, like, there's still lots of murdering, and there's, like, lots of...
True Blood is the exception, in my opinion, of some of the more modern
like,
stuff.
But, like, also, like, even Vampire Diaries, where you would think of it being, like, shiny, sparkly stuff, like, there's still a lot of plotting and killing and, like, mayhem going on. They're not friendly people. Like, they're very vicious.
Well, even...
They're just more manipulative.
Even Vampire Diaries, they're a lot more friendly than what I think of as vampires.
The vampires are still in the sun all the time. They don't... Their blood dependency really depends on the character. They're werewolves. They're mostly just dogs. I mean, they have a lot of, like, it's a friendly goofiness. I mean, it is dark. It is mean. There are mean vampires there, but it's still not your classic... You know, in Vampire Diaries, the son's inconvenient that occasionally kills somebody, but it's not a problem.
The most important thing is that Twilight is terrible. That's the most important part of this.
That, like, it's complete, like, that it's, because I think that there are still genuine ones out there.
Which, there's a lot of witch movies. I see these trailers in these movies, and
And you black out, yeah. And you don't remember.
There's, like, City of the Something that's kind of spawned into Twilight. There's all these weird things. I don't know the names. I'm like, oh, Twilight clone. I mean, okay, that's the werewolf Twilight. There's the werewolf Twilight, witch Twilight.
There are a lot of teen books being made into movies these days that are vampires and werewolves and monsters are your friends. They just are misunderstood. Yeah. And I think, frankly, even Vampire Diaries is that way a bit. Like,
but I don't think that's fun because of Twilight. When I was a teeny bopper, like, I read stuff that was about friendly werewolves and vampires and stuff. And they weren't dangerous.
Right, but those of us that enjoy classic...
your parents say they're dangerous, and you shouldn't hang around with that vampire kid. He's a rebel.
Yeah. Yeah. There's still some TV, like Supernatural has mean enemy. I mean, there's just a more... In today's world, there's more friendliness than there has been in general in modern...
Vampires,
if you use the term vampire 20 years ago, no one would think, hey, maybe he'll help me in any situation.
Well,
no.
But I think that's a bigger speaking to... our culture and society as a general, because think of all, like, so somebody, you guys, did you read the article about how Game of Thrones is, like, a true drama where, like, there's no hope and nothing good happens and, like, Americans just can't handle that?
No.
Okay. Well,
but so, I love that about it.
Yeah. Well, but, like, the article's point was that, like, Americans have grown up with, like, the good guy always wins and, like, hope always accomplishes everything and go light. And you have, like, Game of Thrones.
They burn children.
I have a story when you finish your thing. Continue your thing.
But, like, in Game of Thrones, it's just like, nope, he just died.
Yeah.
Nope, he just burned his daughter alive. Like, the thing is, like, I think that's...
Spoiler alert.
I didn't say which daughter.
Yeah. I think it's just one of those things where we as a society want everyone to be friendly and happier. I don't think it's technically specific to... fantasy.
True. I think Dresden's, what is it, mid-20s? Is that the... just trying to get us back on topic here. Let's try to talk
about Dresden a little bit.
Okay.
Did you have something, Nathan?
I had one funny story that you two might appreciate less. If Jim was here, he'd appreciate. Andy would appreciate if he was in the room. So it's now just Brian's going to appreciate it.
Okay.
But my boss at work came into work the other day and was talking to me. And he said, hey, Nathan, I rented this movie. This movie's amazing. It might be up there as one of my favorite movies I've ever seen. It's No Country for Old Men. I love it. I love it. I love it. I did have to leave for work, so I haven't seen the last 15 minutes. But I really like this movie.
Oh, and I'm my, like, God.
Oh, you poor sweet summer child.
I'm so sorry for you.
So I can't even believe it's a true story.
Don't watch the end of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, and so I checked with the spoilers for a terrible movie, by the way. So I checked. I'm like, okay, how far? What's going on with Josh Brolin's character right now? Yeah. He's like, well, yeah, this, and he got shot at the hotel. I'm like, yeah, so can you believe, like, that's why the movie's terrible, is because they killed him. And he's like, he's dead? I assumed he was faking it. That's stupid. And he just raged out on me, and it was hilarious. Yeah. Well, yeah. But he's like, okay, but I heard the ending's really good. I'm like, oh, you fucker.
All right, so Dresden, book one.
Well, the other game, so he's a wizard.
Yes.
In modern age. And not only that, he actually has an ad in the paper.
Like, yes.
That's his gimmick.
Yes. He literally advertises himself as a wizard for hire in the Yellow Pages.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. He could never, ever make near enough money to pay for his apartment and for his office. Like, ever. Never, ever. He, like, never gets paid ever. Like...
He does do, like, in between books, he talks about actually getting paid for jobs.
There are a huge amount of short story books about his in-between jobs. Plus, he does lots of for the city car.
Also, and he works for the city all the time.
He's a consultant, so that the police pay him. And
right.
The books kind of start, like, shit gets real once the series starts. The assumption, I think, is that prior to this, he's made a decent living scrambling by. Like, if you've lost your puppy, he can go ooga booga booga,
I found it, yeah.
And you give him $100. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he can get by on shit like that because he's a wizard.
Yeah.
But now, like, the books start with having huge cases and the world unraveling. It becomes more like that. And
because he put his name in the paper just to kind of help people out. It wasn't like, I want to be a hero for the world. It was like, I want to help you find your puppy or your lost ring.
And he wants to pay. And he wants to eat.
Yeah, and he wants to pay his rent.
To eat. He does
talk about, like,
He lives in a cheap.
He has a conversation with Nicodemus, and Nicodemus is like, you know, you could just, like, make yourself wealthy beyond the dreams of men and, like, have mind control slaves, right? And he's like, well, yeah, but that's bad. And he's like, but you know you could do that, right? And like, you should just do that, and then you don't have
Bill's
different. A character will meet.
The hero, the true hero of the series.
the rope tie guy.
Okay.
The guy who actually will save the world.
So anyway, yeah. And he's like, and Dresden's like, no. He's like, you know you're doing it like the hard way, right? He's like, well, you know, I'm kind of, like, I feel this need to be the, like, do the right thing, my dad. And the character's just like, you're an idiot, go away.
That was the longest I've ever heard somebody get to say he's a good person.
But he's a, yes. The reason he does it the way he does it is because he's a good person.
I don't think, okay, I don't know if you guys, I think no. Harry's an idiot. Just 100%.
Wow.
I think he is, strong like, statement. The worst at his job.
Because he does it.
He's naive he's like, sometimes.
Because he's like, man, huh? He's doing a good thing. He's like, that's ridiculous.
Well, no,
it's the hard way.
Well, no, he like does it like, okay, so book three, his girlfriend gets turned into a vampire. After he tells her like multiple times, like, hey, don't come to this party, it's super dangerous. Hey, don't come to this party, it's super dangerous. Hey, maybe you should leave this party because it's super dangerous. And then she gets turned into a vampire like an ass. And then he's like, oh, it's my fault. No, it's not. It's her fault. Break
he's
up with
chivalrous.
Her. Is that chivalrous?
That's sexist.
That's not, well... Not really sexist. You know, it's just an idiot thing to say. It'd be like
it's misogynistic, I think, to assume that she's just the weak little girl who needed him to protect her. So the failure.
No, I don't. I think you're looking at it in an odd way. I think it'd be like one of our neighbors telling me that my cat's gonna get hit by a car because I let her outside, and then
no, it's
my
not.
Cat gets hit by a car, and then they're like, "Well, I feel bad. It's my fault because I should have put more pressure on them."
No, because a cat is very different. Like. I actually
you're comparing
agree.
His girlfriend to a cat.
No, I actually,
it's a very
as far as herself of agency.
Katie,
very...
and I said this in the car the other day. I would 100%, if you and I went through the same situation that he and his girlfriend went through, it would like you would 100% tell me to shut up, possibly, and I would still 100% blame myself if things went.
I'm
through.
Jumping. I'm it's jumping on the cat fault. Analogy. Let me go on the cat analogy here. Here's what it is, and why I was saying it's sexist / misogynistic is imagine. Malcolm keeps eating garbage.
Sure.
And you're like, Malcolm, if you keep eating garbage, you're going to die. Malcolm, if you keep eating garbage, you're going to die. Malcolm, if you keep eating garbage, you're going to die. And then he eats some garbage and he dies. And then you blame yourself. You don't blame Malcolm. You should have locked up the garbage. You should have taken him out of there. You should put up a gate. You can't just keep telling him because he's a stupid dog and he's doing a stupid thing. You should have stopped him.
And she just doesn't
That's
understand.
What Harry is saying to himself yeah. about her.
Yes.
And
because he doesn't think she can comprehend
the danger.
What's actually going
well,
on because she doesn't have the knowledge. Yet.
The big thing in those early books is like they think there's these scary things, but no one really. They think, oh,
how
sure.
scary could they be? I would know about
yeah,
them.
Yeah, like, no one really understands.
That is an important thing worth mentioning about real world. And you said, you know, it's the modern world and vampires and werewolves and all this shit exists. Nobody knows that. This isn't like some alternate reality where there's just like witches flying down Manhattan Central
and
Avenue
novels.
And everybody knows.
There's actually a. A female author with a female character who's kind of a detective.
Yeah, and there's some that have that.
But in this case,
the supernatural is hidden.
No one knows except people that are in that world. Wizards, people like that know.
Like
the rest of us don't.
His newspaper ad says he's a wizard. All the normal people thinks he's insane or it's a gimmick.
Yeah.
Like it's not like they're like, oh, you're a wizard. I'll hire a wizard. They're like, you're a detective who's insane. Like, but
yeah.
But that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing with the Susan thing is that he's blaming himself because he doesn't think that she honestly comprehended how dangerous
it
was.
If I had explained it well enough, she would have understood and she would have left / not gone.
I think she's the whole reason that it turned sour, quite frankly.
Yes,
well, yeah,
she was.
She was.
Totally was.
So, like, him, I don't know. Like, he shouldn't have.
Anyway, book one.
I just
one.
Think he's an
book,
idiot.
So, book one. Is he an idiot in book one?
Book one.
No, not in book one.
All right,
summarize book one for us, Brian.
Well, first of all, I like how each book before. Adds new elements to the world. Because after like book 5 or 6, you really get the complete elements of the
correct.
So book one, you just have a wizard who's like, you know, wants to work and get a... He's basically, it's a standard private eye book, you know.
Yes.
He's in the office, a lady, you know, a lady calls for help.
Shoe.
And the girl's all nervous because it's like, I don't think you're really a wizard, but I have a problem, you know, it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
And
her husband's missing.
Her husband's missing. That's a very
and
standard.
And he's my husband.
But then, you know, and then... The big thing with that book is obviously he does a very good job of having multiple elements because not only is he gets his call from the lady, he gets a phone call from the police because he works for them.
Because he works for them.
And he has to go investigate because someone got murdered in a gruesome way. And most of the police don't even believe him either, but there's like a – because there are things happening, the Chicago force has like a special detective agency that are kind of like assigned to the case of weird cases. They get like Murphy, Agent Murphy or not. Well,
detective.
Detective.
Sergeant. Is she Sergeant Murphy?
I think she's a sergeant in the first book.
Yeah.
So he's like a good friend with her, and because she's actually seen, like in some of the short stories, there's a short story how he first meets her as a troll, he saves her from, so she understands her things. But she doesn't
kind of.
Even she still, she thinks that maybe she saw it, like it's that kind of saw it but disbelieved it kind of thing.
Yeah, but she knows things are kind of weird. She knows magic does something, but not really. Like, she just knows there's these elements. So he kind of works with her, and then the book spreads. And the book gets big fast because suddenly there's these dead bodies.
So we're moving ahead a little bit. There's a core cast of characters that's important to know if you don't know Dresden Files. There's Dresden, who we talk about
it. Dresden Files, you shouldn't be listening to this podcast.
Well, maybe. The first book has a couple main characters. It has Dresden. It has Agent Murphy.
Karen Murphy.
Karen Murphy is a big one.
Bob,
which is
Bob. Is
Bob the Skull.
The Skull. His assistant.
It has the White Council.
The White Council's mentioned only one person. The only
person you really meet is Warden Morgan.
Well, but it's a good introductory of like what the White Council is.
Warden Morgan.
You meet his girlfriend, Susan.
Yep.
And then
you meet a reporter named Susan.
Right. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
He goes out on his first date with her
in the book. So they are dating.
Yeah. And she gets frisky in a circle.
She does get super frisky on that first
date. That scene's hilarious.
That's and the world scene. Is very organized because, you know, there's this White Council behind the scenes and wizards have to follow this. There's like seven core rules. Mm-hmm. Don't kill with magic. Don't mind control.
No mind control.
And there's these wardens who enforce the law.
They're basically the police of the magical world.
That's part of the reason also, going back to previous talk, about why the character of Harry is where he is as far as being a gumshoe and putting his ad in the paper. He has a certain set of skills, and that is being a wizard. Yeah. For most wizards, you go into the wizarding business, and that's all behind the scenes. Yes. Like, the White Council pays you, you go kill some vampires, you're a wizard, Harry.
You're a wizard, Harry.
So the problem with Harry is that he's not allowed to be a wizard as far as being in that world, you know, because he fucked up.
And killed someone.
Yeah, yeah. He's on the out. Like, he's been kicked out of being a wizard. Like, he's still got the abilities, but he doesn't get to show up to the club meetings and say, hey, I'm a wizard, guys.
Kind of.
He's like, on probation. They all hate
it's
him.
Mostly probation.
It's mostly probation, but the point is he can't... He has to make a living in the Squaresville world because he can't just be a wizard.
90% of the time, you break a law of magic, you get murdered.
Yes.
The council slices off your head. They have an executioner.
Yep.
He got a special case because it was self-defense, but he has the Doom of Damocles.
Damocles. But not everyone believes it was self-defense.
True.
Including most of the police.
And including his probation officer, Warden Morgan.
So if he's even found guilty of anything, he gets killed. So he has to be all this uppity good guy thing because if he does anything wrong, he will be murdered.
Correct. Which is unfortunate because he's actually a really he's an unusually powerful and unusually untrained wizard because of that.
I don't know that he's unusually powerful.
He is.
Everybody in the books is very open about the fact that raw power, he is like 99th percentile. There are very few people that cannot just smash you with raw magic as strong as Harry can.
But
he has no finesse. In the first book, he knows like three total spells, so he just uses those to do what he can. But he's not gonna pick a lock. He's going to blow up the side of the building, not just the door.
Yeah,
like that building is now the side is gone, and that's how he gets through.
He does
door.
Reference at one point just how many buildings he's destroyed. Yeah. No, they do. In book one, they do, but you weren't really paying attention.
Well, you were talking the entire time.
I was reading you the book.
Well, that counts as you talking.
Yeah, you have to read the book without talking.
Like, it's really hard to listen to a book when it's your inane mouth talking it. Christ.
When Jeremy tells a story, he always exaggerates it, so I can't imagine him reading the book, what he implies while he's reading it.
I do not.
What I do like to imagine is he's reading it, and then he goes, oh, wait, this part's good. And he just starts reading quietly. Did that ever happen?
No.
Maybe?
No.
Okay.
No.
You do make up words and stuff that you just stick in there, I've noticed.
What?
Like what I'm reading over your shoulder.
Oh, like occasionally I just like, in my mind, inserts words into the sentence. That's fantastic. I'm losing my mind.
The first book also introduces, there's lots of factions in this book. So you have the police he works for, you have like the...
Gentleman Johnny Marcone, who's a fantastic
character. Who's basically the crime lord of Chicago. And I like him because he's my favorite time of crime lord. He's a guy who's a bad guy, but he's an organized bad guy. He's a lawful evil bad guy.
Lawful evil is the best lawful evil alignment. Like,
because he runs a city, but he doesn't want chaos. He wants an organized, simple, because it's
hard to make money on chaos.
Well, plus he knows the cops won't give a little bit less shit. He basically can get away with a few more things. He's very methodical. He's very cruel when he needs to be, but he basically runs a tight ship.
and his eyes are the color of money.
And he gets involved early because one of his henchmen gets, because the police case, one of his guys got killed.
There's two facts, because the murder that Harry's called in on is a double homicide.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Because it's one of Marconi's guys who at the time was in a prostitute.
Yes.
He was stooping her.
Because their hearts were exploded from the inside out.
So too. While they were entwined, their hearts exploded.
While they were stooping.
Stooping. Captain Stoobings. So that's the other faction is, what's her face?
Oh, yeah, Bianca.
Bianca's a vampire.
Who runs a whorehouse.
And the mention of the vampires, this is in a world where, oh, there's vampires. In this world, there's the red court, the black court, and the white court.
But you don't know that in this book.
You really only, I think he mentions the first courts, book, but it's just red court.
Well, I don't know that you realize how, like, expansive it is. Like, you just, like, she's just got her little whorehouse, and, like, you don't think
and
of her
she's
as,
a vampire,
like,
and if I'm going to deal with vampires, I'm going to deal with Bianca. Like, in the first book, that's kind of...
Yeah, she's, like, the
main. And this is a more explicit thing in book two.
Correct.
But this is vampire-related, and you're right that this doesn't come up in book one, but you mentioned that the other vampires. So, when pooling mythos to make these books, what Butcher has done is, if there's multiple mythos, he said, fuck it,
okay.
All of them.
Yeah.
So, we look at vampires, and you have... like Dracula,
yep.
who looks human, but he sucks blood, and he can go into monster face when he wants to, and he can be super strong and turn into a bat. Boom. There's your Draculas.
And
that's
totally
the red court.
Murdered by sunlight.
And totally murdered by sunlight. Yes. You know, that's your red court vampires. That's a Dracula.
He's more black court, I thought.
No, he's
no,
red
that,
court.
Cause turns into a bat, can look human, sunlight melts him, all that stuff. But then you have decayed, withered husk, you know, basically a zombie almost,
more
except
like
without the brain.
Dracula.
You know,
yeah, well, because that's the black cork got
the
wiped.
Very
the black
first,
cork
yeah.
got
yeah.
wiped out because of the
okay.
Dracula.
So this is Bram Stoker's Dracula. You know, the modern film version.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
or the Christopher Lee version is. I did the hypnotized thing for those of us listening. That's the red court. You know,
no, that's the black court.
No. The black court is full on decayed,
yes.
chunks of their face falling off.
That's
with,
true.
And so
the red court can look human.
The red court is.
So they don't get that much into black. Sorry, I'm thinking of the black court, and like we're introduced to one person in the first five books
right.
from the black court, and she's not decaying.
I
kind of.
She's definitely undead, and she. Okay, so let's not go. Boom! Looks like a human, can look
we'll
like a monster,
it.
Can turn into a bat, sucks blood, sunlight kills you. That's a vampire, those are the red courts.
Yes.
Boom! You're undead, you live in a coffin full of dirt. Boom! Black court. Boom! You're seductive, you feed on life energy instead of actual raw blood, basically a succubus or an incubus. That's kind of like a vampire. Boom! White court.
White court.
So he takes all these things, and that's why I say book two is more explicit about it.
Yeah,
you know,
werewolves.
What kind of werewolves are there? Well, I guess there's people who can turn into wolves when they want to. Okay. Well, then what about those guys who are fucked over and the moon makes it happen? Sure, those two.
Kind.
What about people who have magic wiggy-wommies and turn into them using sure, why
yeah,
not?
Those exist.
So too. Now there's three kinds of werewolves.
And then there's people that just think they're wolves and are kind of berserkers.
Yeah,
because
that's
a
real life.
There's also wolves that come to people, that become people. That's what you told me.
There is a wolf that becomes a person, as it turns out, in book two.
Yeah, so the point is, he draws on all these different versions of mythos, and he has elements of them all,
correct.
Instead of picking one, which
yes.
is kind of neat.
Even the fairy crow. And I think in book one, like he basically, one of the things he does is he gets a toot-toot.
Toot-toot.
It's a little small fairy. He basically feeds fairies pizza so they love him. And they, you know, he has to
they don't really remember him feeding them pizza, so he has to trap them before he feeds them
yeah.
the pizza, though. Because their memory is not good.
Their memory is bad. Eventually,
well,
gives them more and more.
Like, short-term attention span.
It's like it's like a feral cat. And, you know, you feed them, and eventually they kind of hang around your house more because they're like, wait, that guy feeds me?
Yeah. I was thinking it's more like Katie, where he just has zero attention span.
I think of Katie as kind of a feral cat.
I think of Carrie as Toot Toot the fairy.
Carrie?
Katie. Fairy was in my head. I started with Katie and ended with fairy. Shut up.
Okay.
But you get this little, but later books really dig into the fairy world. So he gives you this little, here's like a
taste.
Because he mentions he has a fairy godmother, but doesn't really get into that. He just says, oh, by the way, I have a fairy godmother who's really a fairy, but more on that later.
More
kind
on
of
that
thing.
Later, yeah. So book one,
it's all groundwork.
But yeah, book one, he's solving a double homicide for the cops. He's being threatened by Johnny Marcone. He's being accused of the murder by his warrant officer and the wardens.
Yep.
And he's told, solve the murder or we're killing you for it.
Well, and the thing is, Marcone, when he first meets Marcone, he's like, hey, I'll give you, what's your rate? I'll pay you like five times your rate to do nothing for 2 weeks.
Yeah, just don't do anything for 2 weeks.
And Dresden's like, well, fuck you, I don't do
that. Yeah, that's not how I roll.
Dresden is definitely the lawful good. Well, he's chaotic good.
He's chaotic good.
But I mean, I said lawful, I realize I was wrong. But he's truly good. He can't do bad acts.
Correct.
He's a very chivalrous.
He's noble and chivalrous and to a fault. To a fault.
At least in the where we have read up to and are discussing.
Correct.
Okay,
the first five books.
Yes. What was this looking
at? I just don't think he is.
You just think he's an idiot.
Well, I think he's an idiot, and I think that sometimes he does good things, not because he actually wants to or feels like it's actually the right thing, but because he either has external pressures or he is trying to live up to what his father would do or what his mom would do or something.
It's not his mom.
Well, in the first five books, his mom, they've made mentions of things that his mom has done, especially when they start talking about his fairy godmother, that aren't the best.
Mm.
But in the first, like, they don't talk about anything negative.
Book four, they do a lot. I do think, and book five.
Sometimes, and this ties in with Katie's point about him being stupid and also the point about being nice. Sometimes I think he is so blindly, ignorantly moral that he's doing terrible things because he thinks they're the right thing to do. You know, like in this first book, he goes and he sees Bianca about the murder of one of her call girls. And this could have been a very civil conversation.
Yes.
He could have talked to her and said, listen, you know, I may or may not approve of you being a vampire. I may or may not approve of prostitution. I may or may not approve of all this stuff. But I'm not fucking with you, okay? I'm just trying to investigate this murder. Let's work together. It's in both of our interests.
Sure.
But that's not the thing to do. No. She's a vampire. Boo to her. So let's be rude and mean and get in a fight.
Well, kind of. I just
she was to blame also.
Just read that chapter like a couple days ago.
She was to blame also. Yeah. Like they're butting heads. But my point is, he could have, if he was really Mr. Do-Gooder, he could have thought about the greater good and he could have taken it. He could have let her
up on the phone instead of talking to her in person.
Right.
Which is gonna raise some hackles.
Right. She definitely was equally to blame for the conversation being flawed and going badly, but he could have let her have her way. He could have been subservient. He could have been bootlickingly, thank you for letting me into your home, oh mighty powerful vampire, you're the best, don't you look lovely today, goodbye.
Yeah.
And that's what the greater good would have been. Instead, he was dumb and it went badly and there may be bad blood.
And then she's angry at him and also killed someone.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because he could have even just, I don't know, been polite.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he's not very good at polite.
He didn't even have to be subservient. He could have just been polite.
Start polite but and she's then a get bad more person. And more.
Why would he be polite to her?
Yeah. And that's the thing, yeah.
That's the thing. He's not just an idiot. He's so offended by evil and anyone who's even a little bit morally ambiguous that it gets him in trouble.
Well, he also responds with, like, if someone's rude to him, he'll be rude right back.
Yes.
He takes it up a notch whenever there's a situation that's
he doesn't take getting pushed on the shoulder well.
Yeah.
Because then he blows your house up.
Right. Well, and so that's the thing is, like, if he was smarter and, like, a lot of heroes will take those punches. A lot of heroes will be the bigger man morally. Correct. He's not a bigger man morally. Yeah.
No.
He does the right things as far as I don't kill people and I want to help people and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But I definitely will punch you in the face if you're a jerk.
Yeah. You're a jerk. I'm going to treat you like a jerk.
Yeah.
And he's the kind of wizard who also has a very, like, a lot of, when he deals with people or other wizards, they're always like, I'm going to cast a spell at you. I'm going to cast a spell at you. And he'll be like, I'm going to punch you in the face. And they're like, what just happened?
I'm going to shoot you with a gun.
This is wizard versus wizard. Why are you punching me? I don't understand.
His wizard staff, 90% of the time when he uses his wizard staff, it's as a staff, not as a spell casting device.
Correct.
It's like, you are within 6 feet of me. This thing is heavy. Now you are bleeding.
And I like the concept of wizards too, because it's like, okay, I'm a wizard. What makes me good is I'm smart and I prepare. If I go into a fight, I'm not just lucky. I'm actually thought about this battle. I've made these potions ahead of time. I've done this. I've imbued these spells. I've kind of prepped myself for these encounters.
Yeah, he mentioned, I think it's in book one, that he has the line where he says, a wizard who knows exactly what he's walking into is impossible to defeat. A wizard who doesn't know what he's walking into is the easiest thing to defeat ever. Like, that's a paraphrase, but basically, wizards win or die on their knowledge and preparation.
Also, I would argue that he's not moral. He lies all the time. Like, it's one of the reasons Murphy doesn't like him. Like, there are plenty of moral people in these books. Like, let's look at book one. What is the reason that Murphy is so angry at him? Because he lies and he doesn't trust
her. He's not allowed to tell her by the laws of the White Council.
He could say that.
He does. Repeatedly.
He says,
I can't tell you because White Council. I can't tell you about.
He can't even tell her
the White Council exists. That's one of the laws.
Well, no, but all he has
it's not a law. It's just he doesn't want to go down that road.
Well, but all he has to do is say, look, I want to help you out. I'm not doing anything on the up and up, but I can't tell you about anything.
But he doesn't. He says that.
Because of, he could even say, just because of the laws of, like, that rule my people, and just leave it at that.
Well, he can't even say my people.
But he, like, hides evidence from her, too. Uh-huh. Like, yep. These are all lying things.
If she
things.
Sees this evidence, he's like, well, if she, because he's dealing with enemy wizards. If she gets this evidence, she's going to track down this wizard, and the wizard's going to kill her. So I'm not saying it's right, because he's definitely doing things that's fucking up his relationship, and he could probably be smarter and think, well, there's some better way I can phrase this.
And there's a difference between overall morally good and being a Boy Scout who never does anything shady.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that if he would have, like, I don't know, shared some of the stuff with Murphy, I don't think that he's putting her in any danger that she's not.
He spends a lot of time sharing, but a lot of times he's like, I think he makes some bad choices in book one, definitely. Because later on, he eventually gets Murphy more involved and he is very open with her and things go much better.
In book four, in fact. He like, even book three, lays it all
book
on
three,
but I in think, book four, he lays it all on the table.
Yeah. But you are right. Because he doesn't do that, he does create problems for himself. That's a
but
huge
I think
problem.
But I think part of that goes back to the whole Susan Rodriguez thing where he's like blaming himself because she turned herself into a vampire. Is he's not sharing with... You know what I think it is that I don't like about Harry? Is I think he's an ass who's condescending and think everyone else doesn't know better.
He's a wizard.
And that he's better than other people. Yeah, but he doesn't think he's better than other people because he's a wizard. He thinks he's morally better than other people. He thinks he's smarter than other people.
No,
I think he thinks that he has to protect people.
What book did
you
read? The Magicians?
Yeah.
Those characters think they're better than other people. Yeah, the Magicians. That's... 30 characters who all think they're better than you. Dresden, I don't think... He may come across that way sometimes and may accidentally do it, but he's not, like, consciously...
He definitely
the
thinks
magician
he knows better than you.
People like that.
He definitely thinks he knows better than you.
Because he knows
100%.
More.
But that's because that's what he's good at as a wizard, is knowing things.
He's not good at knowing things. Bob's good at knowing things.
He's good at knowing to ask Bob.
So Bob, in case we're... Bob is basically a cool spirit...
An air spirit
that is bound to a skull that he has. He basically was a part of his former master. You don't find out much about Bob's history in book one. All you know about Bob, he's very, very smart, very, very old, and he's a perverted. He loves sex.
He's a pervert.
He loves the, like, you know, every time he gets out, because occasionally Dresden can, like, release him from the skull. He'll go out in the town and basically possess, basically...
His cat.
He'll possess a cat. He'll go into a dorm and possess a guy and just have sex all night with it. He'll have, like, a big orgy someplace if he can
he
do it.
He mostly likes to watch the orgies,
I think he tries to possess people.
He
inspires
them. He does offer to do something for Harry, and all Harry has to pay him is let him inside while he's having sex with his girlfriend.
Yeah. Bob's a perverted side character. And, of course, Mr. We mentioned is...
He doesn't have a body. I mean, as a heterosexual... Not even heterosexual. Just as a man, I happen to be heterosexual, but I think this is probably true of gay men as well. Probably. If I had zero possibility of having sex for 1,000 years and I could make deals that consist of me having a body for a night, I would make those deals.
And of course, Mr. you mentioned is his 30-pound tomcat.
Yeah, his tomcat's amazing.
Also the blue beetle.
Yep, the car. It's not blue.
Well, a portion of it is blue.
A portion of it is blue.
Most of it originally was blue.
Most of it was blue.
He has a Volkswagen Beetle that's at least 7 different cars.
And he drives the Volkswagen Beetle because it's so old. So the other thing he mentioned about being a wizard is anything mechanical or electronic that's at all recent just breaks constantly whenever he's around it. So he has this old-ass car. He doesn't have a refrigerator. He doesn't have AC. He doesn't have a hot water heater. So he's always taking these cold showers and, like, not having...
Drinking warm Coke.
And, like, oh. Warm Coke, Katie.
I will say to this, Katie, that what you are saying about Harry is his biggest character flaw in the beginning of the series, by far. And I remember that, and what I was going to say before when I talked about started reading it. I read the first book, and Harry hides stuff from Murphy, and Murphy gets mad at him, and her partner's like, I don't trust you, and blah, blah, blah. And then book two, he hides stuff from Murphy, and Murphy gets mad at him, and Murphy's partner's like, I don't trust you, and blah, blah. And I called up Jim, and I said, Jim, is this going to happen every fucking book? Because if this happens every book, I'm sick of it, and you guys had me start reading
a bad series.
A cliched bad series. And it doesn't happen every book, because what Brian mentioned about that other series is about character growth. The characters in book 1 and book 15 are the same people much as me and the me from 20 years ago are the same person. Yeah. It's amazing the amount of character growth they have. They both sure do. But that's the thing, like, with him, he opens up to Murphy, and Murphy becomes part of the world, and Murphy becomes, you know, more knowledgeable about these things, and stuff like that actually happens, and the characters grow and develop, and he learns to trust people, which includes not condescending to them.
Correct.
You know, a normal human will say to him, "Harry, I can handle this." And he'll go, "Okay, I believe you." Whereas in book 1 and 2, he'd be like, "Puny mortal, you know nothing, you foolish fool."
Well, aside, book 1 or 2, I would say multiple characters die because he doesn't trust them.
Correct.
They go, "We need your help." He's like, "No, I can't help you with that, because if I tell you the information, you'll die."
And then they die.
Without the information, they die.
Oh, the girl in book 2. Oh, yeah. That actually, when that happened, that made me really sad.
He catches on to that, and that's part of his character growth in books 3 and 4 and 5 and going on through 15. Yeah. He continues to open up and trust people more and trust in their capabilities more.
Yeah.
Because then the other thing, like, speaking of book 2, are you talking about the girl at the very beginning? So this is what bothered me about that, is, like, when she was like, "How do you do all this?" as opposed to being like, "You really need to explain to me exactly what you're doing and why you're asking these questions." She's just like, no, I can't help you.
Right.
Like, and that's part of the reason why I think he's an idiot. Like, obviously, because this is a book, people are asking these questions for a reason, and as opposed, he's just, like, pushing evidence off.
He thinks he knows better than everyone else, so he knows exactly what they should and shouldn't know, and he's just like, "Don't worry, you don't need to know, it'll be fine." Well, and yes, it's a condescending move, but it's not because he's an asshole or an idiot.
It's because he's
right.
He's young.
He is 100% correct that these people's lives will be safer and longer if they don't get involved in his world. Where the condescension comes in and where the idiocy comes in is that he's too blind to realize they're already in his fucking world.
Yeah.
These people have put their foot in the pool and say, "So what do piranhas do?" And he's like, "You don't need to know about piranhas."
Piranhas
and then
are bad,
they're fucking
stay out of
dead.
The water. Yeah.
But he didn't even say...
Susan, that's what he says with Susan. Is he like, "The water is dangerous. I'm not going to tell you about piranhas. Just take my
word
for it.
Just don't go in the water.
Don't go in the water."
Well, why not?
And she's like, "I put my foot in the water and I was fine." He's like, "You got lucky. Don't go in the water."
And then she goes in the water
and
piranhas
eat her. Piranhas eat her. And he should have told her about piranhas. Yes.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like he's blind. He's too stupid and pigheaded to realize that he can't prevent these people from getting into the danger by refusing to tell them about it.
Yep. And I understand that. I understand your point. But then, like, another part of my point, I guess, is that he misses out on information himself just because he won't have a conversation with them.
My point is that I agree with you 100%. I want to make sure you're aware of the fact that is my point. But I am saying that this is a character flaw of a moral character.
And a
younger
wizard. I also agree. I just think, like, in book 2...
He hasn't grown yet.
The things that happened in book 2, he didn't know could happen. Like, even though he knows there's things out there, werewolves were real.
He didn't know werewolves were real. Bob tells him werewolves are real in book 2.
And he didn't even know that some of the things, like that one type of werewolf, he thought there was a
hexen wolf. He thought a hexen wolf were the only kind that existed.
When he heard about werewolves, there's one kind. There's like 7 kinds. So, I mean, he's still...
I think that's how it goes. Like, he's like, "Bob, tell me about werewolves," and Bob's like, "Which kind? And it's like, record scratch.
Yeah,
I know. It seems like a whole lot of it could have been avoided if he had just said, "Why do you need to know this information?"
I think if he wrote the Dresden
and Harry in book 7 or 8 would agree with you.
Yes,
if you talk to Harry in book 7 or 8 and say, "Man, that girl sure got killed because you wouldn't help her," he'd go, "Yeah, that girl sure got killed because I wouldn't help her."
Hey, we're not talking about book 6. Or
I'm
seven.
Just
we're
saying
about books 1 through 5.
So your complaints are valid. So they address themselves in that part of the growth. Plus, I think it'd be great if we did the whole series and Katie was Dresden, and she'd be like, "You're a fucking idiot. Leave. You died. Well, fuck you. I don't care. No guilt here, motherfucker. I got shit to do."
And then a werewolf would show up, and she'd go, "Puppy."
Whole different series. Probably the greatest series in the world.
There would be many comments of puppy.
There'd be less war.
There'd be less war.
Anywho.
So hearts are exploding. So book 1 sets the groundwork.
Yes.
We're not like going over full.
Meet the characters, you find out of the world, and it's one of his first books. The other thing to remember about books 1 and 2 especially is it's not just Dresden growing as a character, it's
Butcher growing
as an author.
Yeah.
Which is also a real thing.
Yeah, he wrote book 1 basically like in school. Not high school, like college. Like writing class, basically.
Yeah.
Is when he wrote. And I still think, as I reread it, I definitely feel it's not as good as the later books, but I don't feel it's a bad book. But
it's just unpolished.
It doesn't have the compelling to it.
Yeah.
He is a new author. He is a good author who is still raw, just like Harry, is a good wizard who is still wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a, this is a neat book.
Yeah.
You know, a neat book. Yeah. As opposed to being one of the books in an amazing goddamn series.
Yeah. Yes. And then book two happens, and book two...
I really actually like book one, for the record.
Yeah. No, I mean, I enjoy it.
It's a, and if it was a standalone one novel, I'd be like, that was a really good book. I enjoyed that book.
I like it better than book two.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, even the villains are interesting, because you have this villain...
I can kind of agree with that.
Well, the villains are more interesting in book one.
The villains in book one are better.
You have a guy who's creating this like psychedelic drug, and then his wife is basically freaking out because, you know, she has a family. She doesn't know how to leave him. He has like these other people.
Well, she's a battered housewife from a deadly wizard.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And then Marcon, the people who are helping him are like against, because they lost a child against Marcon. So they're these crazy couple who are helping him out.
Yeah, the crazy couple's interesting.
And there's so much is new and fresh and interesting. You know, like every new element that comes up is like, wow, this is really cool.
And there's not a lot. We talked about the character development. There's almost no character development of any of the characters between one and two.
Correct. That is also true. And that's why I was so mad halfway through. I called Jim halfway through, too. I'm like, this isn't growing. This is, you know.
Because in book two, there really isn't any.
Because book two, it's basically 6 months later.
Because book one, everything worked out for him, being just bullheaded and pushing through the obstacles and doing it himself. And it worked. And it was terrible for him personally, but the world was a better place, and he stopped the wizard, and yay.
Yeah.
And then book two...
So it was actually kind of martyrish hero, like the standard thing.
And then book two, he's like, oh, well, this worked in the first book. I'm going to just bullhead it and go through and do it myself. Oh, my God, I'm going to get 15 kids and this woman and this girl I like and myself all super dead.
And... A police station.
And a police station.
Like
also a police station.
Like that scene.
Oh my God, that
scene. There's this creature that's amazing. One of the villains of the book, quotation, is he's a guy who turns into a werewolf, but he has a family curse, so every 30 days...
It's like the Wolfman. It's my favorite kind of werewolf, and why I don't like... I miss... You talk about Dracula and stuff like that. The one I miss is classic werewolves. I miss where being a werewolf was a terrible thing, and you felt bad for him. Like, you watch Twilight... And you watch American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
American Werewolf in London is a depressing, depressing film. This poor guy.
Yeah.
There's no amazing, cool, isn't it great being a wolf monster? It is depressing and sad.
Once Upon a Time actually does the classic werewolf.
Yeah.
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 As does Harry Potter that we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They do a very good classic werewolf.
Well, that's the thing is like Lupin versus Sirius Black.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of modern werewolf stories do the Sirius Black style. I know he's a dog, nitpickers, but a lot of modern werewolves just do the I can turn into a wolf, you know, because white wolf, the guys who do the Vampire the Masquerade.
Yeah.
You know, they're RPG where you're werewolves, it's that style. It's just like, correct. I feel like murdering everyone right now, and you just Hulk out with a superpower.
Yeah. Whereas every 30 days, oh my God, tonight's the full moon, now what do I do?
So like some vampire,
if my doors aren't locked tight enough, I might kill my wife.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to murder 50 kindergartners on a field trip. Like, that's horrible stuff.
Oh, yeah. And the weakness of that guy being he can only be hurt by inherited silver is a more ridiculous, like...
It is. He's the only kind of werewolf that it matters, and only inherited silver can hurt him.
Yeah.
He's like a ridiculous...
Not even... You can't just go buy silver.
Nope.
It has to be silver that came to you through...
My favorite of the first two books, my favorite scene, and I think one might be a better book than two, but there's two scenes I love in book two. One is Harry gets arrested by Murphy because he's just not being helpful. So he was sneaking into he wasn't even arrested this time. He was sneaking into
the police station
because they were after him
to stop him because they'd arrested the guy with the curse, and he was trying to stop the guy with the curse from changing.
So the guy changes into the werewolf in the precinct and is killing everyone. He actually. Murphy's partner actually sacrifices himself to save Murphy, which is crazy.
Yep.
Everyone's dying, and Dresden's trying to slow the thing down. He's like, he stands in front of it, sacrificing himself to stop it. Then Murphy puts himself right between them.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my God, I'm going to watch Murphy die. Then she starts putting bolts into him, and she actually hurts the thing. And Dresden's like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
She like melted down her earrings.
He
didn't tell her how to defeat
him. Well, he didn't tell her. He put it in a report.
He's
like, how did you know to do that? She's like, well, I read the fucking report, idiot. You gave me a report on werewolves. I'm hunting a werewolf. I read the report.
Yeah. And this is where, because we didn't mention this, but wizards can use their wizard sight to see things and kind of see things in true nature.
Oh, yeah.
So when he sees her, like, standing above
That's not that scene.
That's book three, and that's my favorite scene.
Yeah.
That gave me goosebumps.
But anyway, she just stands there and, you know, stands this thing down, which is so amazing.
It is amazing.
And then
that whole scene, it's such a great scene from start to finish. When he starts changing, like, when he starts seeing the thing, he doesn't even see a change. Like, he looks at the
monitor.
Yeah, he hears the screen.
Security camera. That's right. No, there's the security camera.
Screens. It's just looks at the camera. The guy's
because the camera has no sound.
No. I thought he could. He heard them. I thought
not at first. Not like at first, because it's really haunting. Because like the security camera's like in there, and then all of a sudden like the door to a cell is missing, and then guys are missing.
Yeah, because he looks up and they're all there, and then it swivels back, and the guy that's a werewolf is gone. He's like, well, that's not good. And then it swivels back, and the other cells are all empty of people and full of blood. And he's like, well, shit.
And then a wall isn't there anymore. Yeah. And then like 50 cops die. Yeah. And yeah,
it's just a great horrific scene. And then the end, because like, the bad guys capture the. There's FBI guys who are actually turning the werewolves, so they're trying to do this crime stuff, and they capture Marcone.
Yeah,
and he's like just a crazy ninja guy, and helps. And there's this big fight at the end, just with Marcone being this like this amazing ninja slash awesome bad guy.
That final fight at the end, like, it has all the elements, because it's got, like you said, Marcone. My favorite part of the final fight scene actually is when he puts on the belt. So we're at the end, and like I said, he tried to do it all himself. He tried to protect everybody and keep everybody in the dark, and everyone's going to die, just everybody. And so he's like, well, I'm fucked, and I have no other options. I took this belt that's cursed and is going to turn me into an evil werewolf off of one of the guys. I guess we're going with plan F. I like that whole part. The fight with him in the werewolf form, where he's like loving it and reveling in it, and then like his disgust afterwards. Like, it's so good.
Yeah, and book two brings in a big faction of the college kids who can magically turn into werewolves.
Yes. So well, they have the innate magical ability to do it.
So they're introduced in this book.
Serious Black style.
Yes. They are the Serious Black style. And they're trained by Katie's favorite character from book two.
The wolf lady.
She's like the whole time, it's this woman who can turn into a wolf that's teaching them to be wolves. And he's like, it's weird because she's not really the same as them. Like, they seem gangly and like they don't really. She's really good at being a wolf. And at the very end, she's like, I'll be with my brothers in the north if you need me. He's like, you know, I never thought about a wolf turning into a person. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then and this is between two and three, he does tell Murphy more things. He lays off more.
A little bit.
A few more books. Yes. But he gets her enough. At two, she understands there's a council, and he gets her a lot more.
Because between book two and three, there is development, as opposed to between one and two.
And in book two, so Murphy's partner dying was a huge moment because it immediately broke that cycle.
Yes.
You know, he was the cliched, you know, I don't trust you, and I'm never going to trust you, and I'm going to be, you know, messing with you. And, you know, he was that cliched roadblock, and always having that roadblock. And there's so many TV shows or whatever that roadblock is there every single episode.
Yes.
You know, we're like, oh, that chief is yelling at him, and we all know that the cop knows what he's doing, but his chief yells at him every fucking case. You'd think he'd learn to just get it out of the way. So having a werewolf eat his head really ends that cycle pretty quickly. Now, the other thing book two does, so book one introduced all these factions in the world. Book two introduces introduces allies.
Yes.
Like, Murphy was, you know, she's his buddy in the first one. In the second one, she's smart enough to melt down silver, to turn into silver bullets, to shoot a werewolf. She stands up to a fucking werewolf in book two. Marcone, not his ally, but when they work together, Marcone is really awesome. I mean, he's like this super ninja mafia guy. Yeah. You know, the werewolf kids, sure, they're kind of incompetent now. But, yeah, the alphas. But those are people as allies now. And so it allows it, that's what kind of starts to make him have to / get to be less of the I'm the only person who can handle things guy.
And then book three opens with his best ally in the entire fucking series.
Book three is crazy because it starts
my God,
off
book three.
And when book three started, the first chapter I read it and I'm like, did I miss a book? It starts off, he's with a brand new character called Michael.
Who's
they're
amazing.
Running through a hospital, chasing ghosts, trying to save
babies.
Well,
first they're driving
to the
hospital.
They're
violating all sorts of street signs.
Yeah, and Michael is a super religious guy who's a Knight of the Cross. Who they slowly explain, you know, he
wields a sword with one of the nails from the crucifix in it.
See, Michael actually is a moral person.
Yeah. He is lawful good as opposed to chaotic good.
That's not true. If you want to do that.
It's Batman and Superman. They're both good guys, but...
But Batman's okay with doing bad things for good reasons.
Superman will not jaywalk. Batman will break your kneecaps if it stops you from jaywalking. They're both preventing jaywalking.
I know. I just don't understand the dichotomy between Harry like not being able to be polite to somebody who's evil because they're evil. Because
he's a pig-headed jerk.
So I'm a good guy.
Being a pig-headed jerk doesn't mean you're not a good guy.
Right. Like, I'm a good guy who's also an ass. I can be both things.
No, here's the difference. There's being a good guy, and there's being a capital G good guy.
Yes.
And he is a good guy. He stands for good. He does good. He tries to have good things happen. But he's not a good guy. He's an asshole.
Yeah.
Okay.
Michael is both versions of a good guy.
Yeah. Michael is truly, truly straight arrow, Boy Scout.
They're both going to be willing to die to save an old lady from a dragon. But Michael will also help her cross the street randomly on a Thursday because, you know, help an old lady cross the street.
Whereas Harry,
she'll make it.
She'll be fine.
Well, also, so in books, you get Michael. In the first part of the book, not only do you get Michael involved, you finally meet his
godmother.
Oh, my God.
I really like her.
So you have this. And then
she should be your idol.
How do you pronounce her full name? Leanne Sid?
Let me see.
He calls her Leanna, but...
So you have that going on. And then plus, him and Murphy keep referring to this, like, case I did over the summer. So I'm like, swear to God,
here's the problem.
They do talk about this.
Here's the problem with, like, her name is that it's Irish in root. And so, have you played Final Fantasy VII?
A long time ago, yeah.
So, there's the Moogle with the cat on top of it.
Sure.
Spelled C-A-I-T space S-A-I-T-H, maybe an E at the end, which is pronounced, you would assume, Kate Sith.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It's Kashi.
Oh, okay. So it's probably something like
C-A-I-T,
that.
C A I T is pronounced Ka. Yeah. And like S I T H is she. It's like or Siobhan. Yeah. Have you ever seen
how
to spell Siobhan?
Yes, I do.
Would you ever pronounce that Siobhan?
S I O B H A N.
There's a fucking B in it, and it's pronounced Siobhan.
And book three is also called Grave Peril for those who are.
Yes, Grave Peril.
Grave Peril. But yeah, so book three.
I just call her Leah.
This is ghosts, spirits. We start seeing.
You find a lot about fairies.
In the fairy world, you understand that she is a winter fairy.
Correct.
And there's winter fairy and summer fairy.
They don't really talk about it, but they just say, hey, by the way, winter fairy, summer fairy.
Sharks and jets. Yeah. Winter fairies, summer fairies.
Yeah.
So you kind of get, exactly. So you just got this thing going on.
Yep.
And there's all this. Although
they do, I don't know how much of it, because I'm still rereading, and so with new eyes, I need to double check how much of this was my own fault. But the assumption and the implication that you get is that the summer fairies are the nice ones.
Yep.
They're the good guys.
They say it pretty clearly in here that they're like, both of them are evil. It's just the summer fairies like smile while they're
more manipulative. Okay. They're very, both fairies are very, very manipulative.
They're both manipulative. They're both dangerous. One comes across friendly.
Yeah.
One comes across mean.
But
they're
just,
both manipulative.
Even knowing that, it's still human nature to think that winter is cold and bad, and summer is nice and good.
It is a Lieutenant Karen Murphy, by the way.
Lieutenant Murphy.
Yes. Also, you meet
the first White Court vampire.
You meet a black. There's a party later on where you actually meet characters that are important through it. There's people in those books that are still have importance coming. There's a mega party where.
The
Red Court vampire is having a birthday party, brings in like all these characters that are going to be meant throughout the world.
Also, can we just repeat the sentence you just said where Dresden goes to a vampire's birthday party?
Yes.
Can I mention that book?
It's a costume party.
A costume birthday party.
I won't steal it, Brian. Explain to me the experience of reading book one, then two, then three.
So book one is a book where, like, okay, I liked it. It was kind of cool. Book two, you're like, okay, this world's expanding. I like it. It's kind of neat. Still kind of, like you said, the same sort of things happen again. Book three happens. You're like, I'm never going to stop reading these books.
Yeah.
You finish three and you know you are in for life. You are never stopping.
You are never not reading a Dresden
Files
book.
Would you agree, Katie? You just recently read them for the first time.
I like book three a lot better than book two.
Yeah. The rest of them are like that.
You meet Michael's wife, who's amazing.
One of the only people that Harry's scared of.
I really enjoy that character as well.
Michael and Harry go to a vampire party, and it's a masquerade party.
Yep.
And Michael goes dressed as himself his work uniform. He goes dressed as a Knight Templar, and they all think
carrying
it's
a holy sword.
Carrying a holy sword.
He doesn't have a sword.
No, he does.
No, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
He has daggers.
Yeah.
Shaped like
daggers.
Crosses.
Yeah. Point is, he goes as a Knight Templar, and one vampire is like, ha, that's a cute costume, and he touches him and bursts into flames. And Michael just goes, yeah, that'll happen.
That's a thing.
Aren't all all daggers shaped like crosses?
Well, like it specifically like has cross filigree on it. It makes a point.
You can, or you can have, you know, the round pommel, or you could have a curved.
And
blade, but you're right.
Dresses like the 1950s vampire.
He dresses like Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
Christopher Lee Dracula.
Plastic fangs.
Plastic fangs and the frilly suit and the blah blah.
And Michael's like, "Are you sure you want to dress like that?"
That's like going to Malcolm X's birthday party in blackface.
Yes. Like, well, the best part is, so everybody, like four or five different characters comment on his costume, and they're like, "Wow, Harry, is that really what you're wearing?" He's like, "Yeah, no, I got this."
But we as the readers don't know what it is.
Katie asked me, like, the fourth person comments on it in the book. You asked me, you were like, did I miss what his costume is? I was like, just wait for it.
Then you asked me if I knew what it was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's what a dick. Again, he's not a good guy.
No.
He's a good guy, but he is not a good guy. Because a good guy does not dress up like a 1950s Christopher Lee Dracula
for a vampire's birthday party. Yeah.
And as far as the good, like, Michael oftentimes is very concerned about dressing. Because, I mean, Michael knows that dress is a good guy, but he does some questionably good things. And he's always concerned for his soul. Because he's super religious. I mean, he's a Knight of the Cross. You meet Father Ford, who
runs
the church.
I just want to point out that the reason that they're at this party to begin with is because Dresden lost Michael's sword.
He doesn't know the sword's there.
Well,
that's true. They don't. He's there to get information, though.
But he wasn't planning on going to. The only reason he's going is because he lost his sword. Because
what happens is that early in the book.
Why did he lose his sword?
He
doing something immoral.
Yeah. Basically, if you wield a
he was trying to get out of a deal.
He was trying
if
to get out of a deal.
If you wield one of those weapons, you have to have faith in it,
and you have to do moral things.
Yes, and Dresden tried to screw over his fairy godmother with the sword, and the sword was like, "No, the power of goodness is no. You're being a dick,"
and it fell out of his head. The best part was his fairy godmother was like, "Yeah, I knew you were going to do that because you're an idiot. Thanks for the sword."
So she took the sword.
She agrees with me.
By the way, yeah, I knew you were going to do that because you're an idiot. She says that to him a lot.
A lot.
That is like her catchphrase.
And is she wrong?
She's never wrong.
You find out because in books 1 and 2, you don't find out about his sister. You know he killed someone. You know his previous master was a bad guy, and you know that he helped had his fairy godmother help. And you also know there's this demon called He Who Walks Behind.
He Walks Behind, oh God.
Is chasing Harry. And I forget when he comes in.
You don't meet him for several, but he's not in the first five, but he is terrifying.
They talk about
seeing his shadow behind him and stuff like this. Like, people have this idea.
Yeah, but it's just a cool name of a villain. And he owed his friend Godwin because she basically saved him. Otherwise, he would have died back when his master was fucking with him. And, well, I think it's book, I'm not sure, maybe it's book 4 that goes into the full history of that.
Only a little bit, but yeah. It's a later book that they go into it fully in detail.
But yeah, his master there were, and then it was him and another girl were apprenticed.
Yep.
And then Dresden kills the master in self defense by burning the house down, and she dies in the house fire.
Correct. And she was,
and that's
trying
what
to
he's
help
on trial for originally.
In book 1.
In book 3, really, Harry gets set loose because Carrie Murfin gets hurt because these demon creatures, well, something that's controlling ghosts. Basically, when he uses his wizard sight, you see a ghost, but the wizard sight shows that these barbed chains wrapping around the ghost.
Is Mort in book 3?
Yes.
Yeah, Mort
in book 3.
Like, there's a guy who talks to, basically all like, so it's a very interesting concept that these ghosts are kind of being manipulated by some other force. So he's investigating that. And then on the side, you got this whole demon, this whole
And you get that amazing scene we were talking about where he sees Karen in his wizard sight.
So he has his wizard sight up because he's like pulling these barbs out of one of the police force guy's body, which is actually kind of cool. And then Karen walks in and she's just like full on angel.
Yeah.
Like a Valkyrie.
Like a Valkyrie. I think that's what the word he uses.
Because whatever he sees in his wizard sight is
permanently burned.
So sometimes he opens it up and looks at this guy and says, "Oh, that guy looks like death itself," and then he's going to scribe me for life. Oh, and he looks over at Murphy and sees like this beautiful angelic. Yeah.
He often comments how he wishes he could forget about things that he sees with his wizard sight, but there are exceptions. Like in later books, he'll say that all. He's like, "Man, I saw this thing with my wizard sight and it was terrible, and I wish I could forget that."
Well, and then
there are exceptions.
And this is one spoiler for farther on. When he sees her later in the book, she's more worn down because of all the shit gone in her life. She's like, she's still in glowing, but her clothes are more tattered.
This barely a spoiler, which thing there's in a later book, there's a creature he sees with his wizard sight, like sees it like a glimpse, and like he's a wreck for like,
yeah, like shatters his mind,
like it shatters his mind, like he spends like a day puking in a corner crying.
He goes to the alphas, the alphas. And he's like, "I need 3 hours in the room alone.
Yeah,
no one could talk to me. I saw this thing.
Yeah.
It was the most hideous."
Yeah.
Creature I've ever seen in the world.
I think the wizard sight is a really cool idea, especially since you do, like, it's not just like like the snapshot of a thing is the way that it permanently is, like seeing someone's soul. Is.
Which and I like the flip side. Well, looking at the eyes thing, we haven't even talked about
the flip also side really of amazing. The flip side of the wizard sight is he has his wizard sight that he can see things magically, and then flip side he'll occasionally capital L listen, and he's listening with a capital L, and they very blatantly and specifically point on the like the first book of it. He's like, you know, yeah, it's with a capital L, but it's not magic. I'm just really good at listening.
Yeah.
Like anybody can do this. I just am really listening, and I love that they still break out the capital L. Yeah. I listened.
It is really cool.
Yeah, so yeah, also if you stare into it, if you stare into a wizard's eye, you kind of peer into their soul and you get like a good picture of what the other person looks like. Yep. You get a character build of them.
Yeah.
So you see each other's souls, basically.
So basically he tries to avoid eye contact.
Yeah, and him and Karen have, through the first five books, never done it.
Yeah.
Him and Susan did do it the first time they met. And Marcone tricked him into doing it the first time they met.
Well, Marcone didn't really trick him, did he? I don't remember.
He did. It says Marcone tricked him.
Okay.
Because Marcone's soul is this organized thing and all this really ridiculous, like, powerful thing.
He saw into Marcone's soul, and he was like, Marcone doesn't look any more scared of me, but I'm more scared of him.
Yeah. Which is not how it usually goes.
Well, when Susan looked into his soul, she started vomiting after.
Yeah, she threw up.
Because they don't know what exactly was going on. So he's got some, you know, he's got some issues down there.
He's got some darkness in his past, let's be honest.
Well, again, the abusive relationship with the psychopathic master.
Yeah. Dead father. Killed his first girlfriend.
Killed his first girlfriend while murdering his master.
Yeah. He's got a dark past.
So book three, you have him fighting. You're chasing down Gulser being controlled. Michael lost his magical sword in the first book, which is a big fucking deal. And Michael, because Michael's a family guy. He's got like four kids. He lives in a white house picket fence.
He lives in a cul-de-sac, for God's sake.
Yeah, he's your classic suburban dad.
He's actually a carpenter. I love that he's a carpenter.
Yeah, he's such a fun character. And I think in the first five books, book three is the only time you encounter him.
Book five is all about him.
Yeah, sorry. I think. So
the Lord protects me. Also, I wear Kevlar.
So then we get to the party where Katie declares Dresden a stupid person, but I also declare Dresden the greatest person in the world.
It is kind of an amazing scene.
So they're at the party, and he gets there with him and Michael, and he's like, Michael, don't touch or drink anything because vampires. It's a party, and they have to... medieval creatures or fantasy creatures have to follow certain rules. If they say we're not going to hurt you, they're the accords. So if they say they're going to do something, they're not going to do it, but they can manipulate the situation. They might say, I'm not going to kill you today. Here's a drink. Oh, I didn't know someone poisoned that drink. Now you're dead.
That's unfortunate for you.
Yeah. So you have to be very careful. They're very wordy. Yes. They're very lawyerish.
Letter of the law.
they're troublesome.
I like how he says, when the courts were originally written, we all agreed there was no spirit of the law.
Yeah. So you have to have an invite to get to the party. They're at the party, and they're trying to get information. You meet the Black Court vampire there, who's friends with the first Black Court vampire you meet.
Yeah.
Then there's a White Court vampire who comes in with his girlfriend, and he's super sexy.
She's super sexy.
Also
her. I think they can both be true.
Thomas is the White Court. I would do both of them.
That's Thomas. Thomas is the White Court vampire. Mavra. Mavra is the Black Court vampire. You meet
a dragon.
There's fairy godmother there.
So earlier in the book, the very beginning of the book, he mentions, like, Michael's trying to convince him to marry his girlfriend because they've had sex, so now they have to be married. Right. And Michael's very bothered about this.
Like you do.
And he asks Michael, well, how did you meet your wife? He's like, well, I saved her from a dragon. And it's just kind of a throw-off comment. You don't really think about it. And then, like, three quarters of the way through the book, he meets a dragon, and it's very present. Like, speaking his first name almost kills Harry.
And when he meets Michael,
and then Michael and the guy look at each other, and the guy's like, "If your brother knew how to do that, he'd still be alive."
And Michael, I think the guy almost like full dragons out in him, because obviously dragons in human form and all this. And all these other really powerful beings. There's basically it's like the supervillain convention birthday party.
Going on in costume.
Yeah. So then here comes Susan sneaking, because we didn't mention Susan's a reporter for like Esquire or whatever, Inquire magazine, Supernatural magazine,
and she it's like the Weekly World News.
And she knows
she's hit the jackpot because this shit is real.
She's seen some demon creatures and she's seen some werewolves. She knows shit's real, but they always get over it. And whenever Harry's around, things are fine. So she doesn't really know. She's literally going into super villain headquarters with every character that exists.
She just wants to get an interview.
Yeah, she wants to get an interview.
Interview with a vampire. She read the book.
She's also an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's at the party. The party's going on, and suddenly, and actually, Harry does have a drink there because they're going on.
He does, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, like, I don't understand that either. Like, he...
Oh, he was, because he was being cocky.
He was being cocky.
Someone asked him He did a toast. He said some kind of stupid Dracula thing, made a funny joke, swigged down and the wine.
His drink.
Thomas walks up a minute later going, by the way, don't drink the wine. By the way, it's poison. Everyone's going to pass out in a minute. And Harry's like, well, that's not good.
Harry's like, hold on a minute. And then he goes and throws up in a plant.
Well,
yeah.
I know. I just don't, like, I don't... He was so dumb.
But he was being cocky.
He was being cocky. And I tell you what, guys sometimes when they get too cocky do stupid things. It's a rumor I heard once, and I'm going to believe it.
Brian's never done it, personally.
I never would have been. But yeah, he was pure cocky stupidity, 100% moron. But it was really funny what he did, just had a bad side effect.
Yeah.
So then the vampire goes, hey, wait a minute, that girl doesn't have a real invitation. So they grab...
They try to grab
Susan. So he's like, well, no, you can't have Susan. And then everyone's giving the vampire girl a gift. It's like, it's her party. And then godmother's...
Well, that's not what they actually say. They say that you can either have Susan or Michael, but you can only have one guest.
Well, so you're only allowed one guest.
One guest. So he brings Michael as a guest.
So only one person's protected by the Accords.
Yeah.
So then they're having the big awesome party. Everyone's giving the gifts to the lady. And
it's exchanges. You give her a gift, she gives you a gift.
And I forget what the dragon gives her. There's a cool thing with the dragon. It's off the side. But then the godmother gives her the sword.
Yeah.
Gives her
not everyone's giving. She's just giving out gifts.
Yes.
Fairies cannot accept gifts because that would bind them. And so his godmother has to return the favor.
Yes. Because then it's a trade.
Because then it's a trade, not a gift. That's why she gives him something.
So she gives her the sword back. Of course, Harry. And then, of course, Michael's like, well, I see the sword.
Yeah.
I have to go in. Yeah. I can't not. That's
I can't
the
not
sword.
Sorry, guys.
She's gonna shatter it as a gift.
She's gonna use it to kill an innocent, which will shatter the sword forever.
And then right before she gets really ridiculous, she's like, "Oh, Harry, I have a gift for you." And they wheel out a headstone.
Yeah.
And it says Harry Dresden died doing the right thing. And I think I cried of just
it's
awesome.
The best thing ever.
Well, because they show that first, right? Like, that thing is like, they're like, here we go, died doing the right thing. By the way, here's a situation.
So they know, and so everyone in the room knows Harry has to react. And then he's like, well, vampires exist, the courts exist, wizards exist, but there's kind of a neutral peace. Like, no one, they skirmish and they
fight. It's the Cold War.
So Harry knows if he does anything, he could cause shit to go wrong.
Yep.
And he's surrounded. People are being drugged.
Yep.
And eaten. Yeah. But, you know, him being him, he's like, well, fuck it. All hell breaks loose in the room.
Yeah.
And just complete, you know.
Yeah, because then they're like, he died doing the right thing. By the way, here's the sword we're going to shatter forever. Michael's like, I'm in.
Yeah.
And then Harry goes batshit.
People start being grabbed all different directions. And suddenly Harry just like unleashes magic that basically burns the entire building
down.
His
girlfriend had brought like all sorts of weapons in her bag. She went as Red Robin, Little Red Riding Hood, by the way, which I think is amazing.
Yeah.
And she was smart enough to bring actual weapons.
Real honest to God weapons. Garlic, a semi-automatic pistol, holy water.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
She's pretty loaded for bear.
So just the whole fight scene, I mean, it's impossible to describe.
Enough.
I don't want to, but the whole encounter the party is one of the greatest book scenes. It's
amazing.
And it's very good. The whole party is an amazing scene. But and then the fight, like Dresden going out, that kind of encapsulates, it's the first real example of what Katie was saying she hadn't really noticed in the first couple books. It was that he is nothing but raw power.
Yes.
Like, when he goes into fight mode there, he doesn't do backflips and he doesn't snipe out individual vampires. He explodes.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
Like, literally.
Like, all he does is, like, if I shoot flame in every direction and it's hot enough, eventually everything will be dead.
Yeah. It's pretty true.
And that's an undeniable tactic.
You burn anything hot enough.
Yeah. And then that happens out. Then actually, the book peters out a little bit because in the chaos, Susan got captured.
Yep.
He finds out she got bitten by the red vampire. So she's not in this world. You get bitten by a vampire, you're now half vampire.
For the reds,
you're a half vampire. Once you kill a person in your vampire,
if you drink someone to death, then
she becomes a full vampire.
We haven't even really touched on who the actual villain of the book.
Obviously, the whole thing was said it was a trap. She basically said the whole party was a trap to kind of trick Dresden into doing this. And then you find out the guy behind the scenes was actually...
She was doing things to fuck with Dresden, but the villain... He doesn't fight her at the end.
Yeah.
Like, the actual villain is someone else.
The villain is basically... When the book starts, part of the reason you're confused is Harry and Murphy talk about this case that they solved, like, last went like a month ago over the summer. And it turns out that his ghost was basically around causing all this chaos.
It was another evil wizard who came back as a ghost and was fucking with Harry's world, including eating his soul in a nightmare and putting Murphy into a catatonic state.
Well, sure, that's good stuff.
Like you do.
Yeah, they really fucked. Yeah,
but so there's so many good scenes in book three. Like the scene where he goes into a dream. So he's like, okay, we have to deal with this wizard. This wizard that's a ghost is a problem, and he only attacks me in my nightmares. So here's the plan. I'm gonna go into my dream.
Good plan. Great plan.
Great plan. I'm gonna go into my dream, and then I want you to kill me while I'm dreaming. And his girlfriend's like, what? He's like, no, really, just for a minute, though. Like, just for a little bit, kill me, and then bring me back. It'll be great. So he goes into the dream, and he's fighting a guy, and he's getting his ass kicked. And then all of a sudden, there's two of him. Because he has a ghost, but is still alive. And then him and his ghost kick the other ghost's ass. And it's amazing.
That is really good.
Yeah. I love that scene.
No, it is pretty. One thing that Harry does, I think it's, I'm not sure what book it starts, but it's like his, he basically, whenever he sleeps, he's unconscious. If he gets knocked
book
unconscious.
Book two, he meets two, him for the first time.
Yeah. He meets like his
alter
inner,
ego.
His alter ego is basically his, like, his it or his.
Yeah, whatever. His it, I think, is what he calls it.
It's his Jiminy Cricket. It's just in his head when he's sleeping.
And it looks like him, except sexy.
Yeah.
So much interesting.
He always talks to himself. He's like, sometimes it's basically either passes up from exhaustion or someone beats him down. He always has his chance.
That's the only way he sleeps. I don't think he can just go to sleep at the end of the day. He has to pass out from exhaustion or get beaten unconscious.
Well, the books are kind of like 24, where it's really just a book is over the course of one to two days. It's like 3 days is probably the longest length of a book series. It's like book one, you find out a detail. You know, day one, you find out a detail. End of book day one, you go, oh, by the way, the world ends in 24 hours, so you know your time.
So you should really go fix that.
And the world's always ending in completely different ways. And so it's not always the world ending, but it's always like maybe the world won't end, but Chicago is going to be destroyed.
Yeah,
so it's
be
not
no
like
Chicago.
Always, he's not always saving the world, but he's saving a lot of people's lives.
And all the people he knows and cares about.
Yeah.
And he does mention, like, in book three or four, he's like, I feel like there's someone behind the scenes that keeps pointing these people at me to ruin my day. I should look into that at some point, but I'm too busy.
Right.
Well, because book three ends, because so now he's like, well, Susan's half vampire. She doesn't really. She's like all distraught.
No. I think we are skipping an important step. Is Bianca offers to not do anything and just like let him go and leave everything be if she can have Susan.
Yeah, if you just leave Susan there.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I'll trade you. We keep Susan. Everything's fine.
Everything's cool. Peace, no war. Like, otherwise, war between the wizards and the vampires, and I'm going to kill you and also everything you've ever loved.
So one soul.
Your choice.
Yep.
You know what also would have prevented war between wizards and vampires?
If Susan hadn't gone to the party?
If Dredson had been polite in book one.
Yes, that's also true.
He walks up, he sits down with Bianca, he's like, hey, I'm curious
he
about
brought
what's her name.
Sunlight into her house.
Not until after he sat down with her.
He didn't use it, but no, he brought it into her house.
He used it. That's the only reason he left.
Yeah.
But I mean, he left his staff at home. He left a lot of his...
No, he brought his staff with him. They took it away from him at the door.
But he said a lot of it was like, I can't bring everything.
I can't bring everything.
You can't walk into a negotiation with loaded guns. So he basically was... He was fairly downtrodden, but he had the handkerchief of sunlight.
And a potion of sunlight.
I just read this chapter. He sits down with her. He's like, hey, I want to talk to you about that your whore that just died. Obviously, he's like, I want to talk to you about what's her name. Yeah. And then she immediately just attacks him. Because she thought that he had killed her.
Yeah. Everyone thinks Harry did it. Because the only person powerful enough and stupid enough to kill people by blowing up their hearts that would kill a whore and a mobster is Harry Dresden. We all know this. That's the only person in Chicago that would do this.
He's the only wizard in town.
Yeah, he's also the only wizard in the phone book. So.
Well, he's the only wizard in the phone book who's been kicked out of wizarding because he killed somebody with magic.
Because he killed someone with magic.
And I get that. But, you know, maybe after he caught the guy at the end of book one, he should have went back and talked to her.
He could have negotiated.
You know?
He could have.
Like, I'm just saying, like, he burned that bridge. Or, like, the bridge was on fire, and it was kind of half rubble, and he's like, fuck it.
Yeah. But the thing is, he even got madder.
He could have also, I liked your suggestion before, called her on the phone.
That would have been better.
He could have handled it better, but the course he took, he literally said one sentence, and she went for his throat.
That is true.
He did.
And then because he used the sunlight... The vampires like to have their outer shell, but it revealed what she really looked like, and she took that very personally.
Yeah.
She's like,
she prefers to be sexy lady, not ugly bat thing.
Not a bad thing.
But you know, existing. She likes that.
She does like existing.
So you get a good... So the church... This is the first time book three is a good time. The church is brought in as an element because you got Father Forehill his whole church going on. You get Michael. So that's kind of the new faction you have going on.
New good guy faction.
Michael's a good character.
You also have the new fairy faction.
You have the Wincor. You meet the different... You know there's all the vampire
not a
factions.
Good faction.
Correct.
You're in a different faction.
What he does with side characters, like if you meet the alphas, they'll come in every couple books to some degree. So it's not like every book has all the characters. They're always coming in and out.
And then there are some books where everybody's in. You're like, holy crap, what's going on?
Yeah. So that's book three.
So that's book three. And then book four.
I always forget the name. I'm terrible with the names of the books and the orders.
Summer Night.
Summer Night is book four.
Summer Night.
Oh, yeah, Death Mask was
Death
three.
Death Mask is five.
This one starts off exactly like book one.
Oh, yeah, Grave Peril, Grave Peril is three.
Ugh. So this one starts off exactly like book one. He's in the office. He's having a day. Because he has his little... And then a lady comes and is like, hey, I need to hire you.
No, he walked in and she was standing there.
Oh, she was already there.
Because he wasn't going to take... He's distraught from his vampire girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And one of the alphas is like, hey, dude, you've got this appointment. Also, by the way, notice you're being evicted from your house and your office. You should go to your appointment.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, fine. I'll go to my appointment.
And she's one fine-looking lady.
She is a fine lady.
So there's a second. Sexy-ass lady waiting for him in
his office.
He's like, I need to hire you for some help. And was it maybe a minute in the conversation he realizes something's weird about this?
Yeah.
And then it turns out that she's like the a fairy queen.
Yeah, a fairy queen. The winter queen.
The winter queen.
It turns out there are three queens of fairy for summer and three for winter. There's the mother, the queen, and the lady. The queen is described as the present queen. The lady is the future queen. And the mother is the past queen. And it also seems like the older they are, the more powerful they are. But that's about all you know at the first.
So it's the Winter Queen. She's like, hey. And so he finds out. She's like, I need your help.
He's like, that's nice. Get out.
Yeah, get out. And she's like, well, you owe me. I'm like, I don't owe you shit. He's like, well, you're a fairy godmother, sold me your contract. He's like, well, fuck me.
Because then she's like, all right, I'm going to prove it to you. And so she has one of his hands pick up a letter opener, puts his other hand on the table, and then stabs himself clean through the hand.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I guess you maybe do have me over a barrel here.
I do like that he finally starts to get smarter because he's like, maybe after I complete your three tasks, one of the conditions is you can't sell my contract again.
Yeah. He thinks through the contract with a knife in his hand a little bit. And he tells her that he'll complete three things, but he gets to choose whether he completes them. And she chuckles a little bit.
He's relatively good at not repeating mistakes, but he does make a lot of mistakes.
Fortunately, there are a lot of mistakes out there for him to make, as it turns out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got some pretty shenanigans things going on there. So, and she's like, okay, she tells them, well, then you find out that each house has this night. There's like a human representative of each house called the Summer Night or the Winter Night. And she's like, well, the Summer Night got murdered. And he's like,
no, she doesn't even tell him it's the Summer Night. She's like, this guy got murdered. You need to find out why and who did it and prove it wasn't me. That's your job.
And Bob recognizes him.
And then, yeah, he tells Bob who he is. He's like, Harry, you don't want to... Piranhas.
Yeah.
Don't go in the water.
So then he's like, why does Winter care about the summer guy dying? Then before even like a minute later, the White Council comes to town and is like, hey, by the way, you know, you started a whole fucking war.
Yeah.
We're gonna have a
war. Which we're losing, by the way.
Because it's vampires. And we need like summer's help. We need winter's help, and now because you know you got the shit going on.
So part of it is the fairies have their own little world that you can go into, and they need either summer or winter's help in order to be able to cross planes.
Because wizards don't fly real good.
Well,
it's beyond, I mean, it's like dimensional transportation.
Yeah. It's also faster, like they also mentioned that it's really hard for them to cross continents otherwise because planes are real bad.
Oh, yeah, you meant literal, airplane flight, not bad wizards can fly.
No, I meant literally
getting like Harry could literally fly if you gave him, you know, a couple feathers and he did a dance and put some potion into a...
Yeah.
I like he puts his potions into sports bottles.
Yes.
Like just the plastic squirt bottles at the gym.
So the Wizard Council is trying to get Summer's help. He's going out of his way now working for Winter.
Yeah.
And they're like, by the way, we're not sure about you because you might have started this war on purpose because we still... Yeah.
Well, and then Summer says no. Summer just straight says no.
Yeah.
Winter says, maybe. I've already told the person that would make this happen. You guys have fun figuring out who that is.
So everyone's mad at
Harry. Everyone's mad at Harry.
So then you kind of really get... And then, of course, like then the next page later, his dead girlfriend comes up. He sees his dead girlfriend hanging out.
So his high school girlfriend, not so dead after all.
Yeah, the one he burned in a fire.
The one he thought he burned in a fire, apparently.
Yeah.
And then you find out more about his history, because him and her were girlfriends.
And this is the... I said this off air, but it's worth noting on air that this is a book that when I was loaned the books, the person who loaned me the books forgot to loan me this book, so I skipped this book. And so I, oh,
yeah, you mentioned this, but I'm envisioning missing all of book four and trying to understand all what's going of on
book four
and book five.
So think of all the characters introduced in book four, like, you know, summer lady, summer knight, summer queen, winter lady, winter knight, winter queen, his ex girlfriend who's totally not dead. All these people show up in the book important. I read, and then he just like, hey you. I'm like, what do you mean, hey you? That bitch's been dead. How? What? What?
The alphas go from kids that are a little annoying to like. Full-on, like, superheroes.
Yeah, yeah. Try reading 1, 2, 3, 5 and be really confused, because that's what happened to Nate.
John Acker missed a book in the series, too.
Well, it's kind of like, I was marathoning Fringe, really, and I were marathoning Fringe, and on Netflix, you watch season one, and you watch season two, and there's what is honestly the season finale of season two, but then there's one more episode in season two on Netflix, and that episode is the eighth episode of season three. It's right there. And so the thing is, there's this dramatic cliffhanger, and then there's just them solving a crime, and nobody... What?
Two ends in a pretty ridiculous way.
Yeah! And so then the very next episode, it's all like, whatevs. And then the whatevs shrug is the season finale as far as Nathan's concerned, because that was the last episode of season two according to Netflix. And I'm like, what the fuck kind of season finale was that? Hey,
it was teasing for season four.
What the fuck was that all about? Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So I googled the fuck out of that.
Excuse me, I watched a show where, you know, they had the 15-minute, well, it used to be 15-minute commercials, now it's commercials every 8 minutes, but basically think of 15-minute segments. Well, the season finale, the second and third segments were interchanged.
Sure.
Oh, first segment, third segment, second segment, fourth segment. And I'm watching going, I don't understand.
I saw an episode of Farscape that went 1, 3, 3, 4. So it wasn't even transposed. It just showed the third quarter of it twice. So there was a huge jump. And then they're like, you were probably confused, so we'll show you that again. And then there was the finale.
It's like, what's happening? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Anyway, so book four you don't want to skip.
No, don't skip book four.
It brings back the alphas we mentioned. It's good. And it really goes really in depth.
It's when he finally lets Murphy in on everything.
Yeah, 100%. She's pretty good at book three, but he drops it all in.
He's like, all right, you're terrified. This is going to scare you shitless. Are you sure you're in? And she's like, yes. All right. Drop some knowledge on
you. And even as for the reader, you really get the full in on this. So now you have like the vampire courts, you got the werewolves, you have ghosts, now you have the full fairyland. Now you're kind of, as a reader, you've kind of touched on 90%. Book five still brings in the final
piece of the puzzle.
The heroes of the book.
They're not heroes, Brian.
Not all of them. Some of them are very, very bad. Anyway, book four. Book four. And I know it's hard to get a lot of detail. Basically, you go back and forth between the different courts. You meet the different queens. It's all... You know,
it's much more detective-y than end of the world scary.
Because he's solving a murder.
Because the whole time he's solving a murder.
Yeah.
And it's really well done. And you've still got the page turningness. And there's still a giant fight at the end. But it's much
more... And the world does still hinge. I mean, if he doesn't... If he takes 5 more minutes to solve this murder, the world is destroyed.
Right, but with 3, he's not even really solving a crime the whole time. It's just like, oh my God, 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 book over.
True. Another key factor in book 4 is we meet for the first time in detail the White Council. We actually meet... all the
listens to wind.
Listens to wind. The gatekeeper. Ebenezer.
The Merlin.
Ebenezer's amazing. The Merlin.
Not really his uncle, but
teacher.
His mentor.
Yeah,
I like Ebenezer a lot. Ebenezer's a great character.
So you meet all these interesting characters. Because there's 7 of them, and they all
almost as cool as the gatekeeper.
Yeah. No, I just and almost also, called him something, also, but we're also, in the first 5 books.
No, you also meet. You meet them, and you meet their little scribe, the bookkeeper.
Bookkeeper,
The bookkeeper,
he's like their accountant. The accountant character of the book.
There is an accountant character for the White Council.
He's the White Council accountant.
Someone's got to keep track of this shit.
Yeah,
it's true.
So, yeah, so I mean, there's not a lot to say because it's almost impossible to get into the detail of what's going on. It's just really cool.
It's really well done, and they bring back
it's more ally gaining as well,
and the fact that they still hate Harry and still think he's a criminal, which I thought was a good because you kind of forget about that. Like in book 3, it's kind of like. He's just a representative of the White Council. I mean, like, he starts a war, obviously. But, I mean, other than that, he's just kind of representative. And then book 4, it's like, no, they really still kind of hate Harry.
And the thing is, his friends are really there because Harry is just disrespondent. He doesn't care about much. He's like, and then with books, he's like, man, it seems like it's snowing in June. That's kind of weird because the weather patterns are going crazy because of the whole the fairy thing.
I like that he shows. So one of the requirements for the wizards, the White Council, when they meet is you must show up in a robe. Turns out Harry's cat peed on his, so he shows up in a bathrobe.
And I don't even know if I believe that his cat peed on it. I like... He might have just never owned it.
It's possible. His cat's amazing, by the way.
His cat is amazing.
Because his cat doesn't pee
almost
on other
as
things.
Cool as his dog.
He doesn't have a dog until later on.
I know, but his dog's cooler.
Spoilers!
Spoiler!
Yeah, spoilers, but like they never talk about the cat peeing
but
on it.
Also, you know what? Maybe it's just because I'm a hipster. Mister for life.
Nope.
No, I don't care. I am almost certainly wrong.
Yeah.
But someone needs to take this
someone
stance.
Someone has to take that stance.
Mister for life.
I want to see, well, this pack a journey across the country just to his
two animals.
Yeah.
That'd be amazing. So, anyway, also, he doesn't speak.
I listened to like four terrible spoilers.
Yeah, I know.
I stopped myself. And like, I was like, oh my God, words.
He also does a correspondence course to learn Latin, and they only speak Latin because they're from all over the world. And he's so bad at it. He barely understands it, and when he tries to speak it, he offends everyone there because he's just not speaking words that make sense.
That's not true. All of the apprentices are
think
very
it's really
entertained.
Funny. Yeah,
yes.
They all think it's pretty funny.
And what he doesn't realize, which they hit that a little bit in this book, is Harry doesn't respect authority, and he's really the first wizard of the councils to not... Mostly, if you're a wizard of the council, they tell you what to do, and you just listen, you do it. He's like, they tell him to do something. He's like,
because
well,
this guy's called the Merlin.
Yeah.
When someone called the Merlin tells you to do something, you go, yes.
And Harry
yes,
always...
Yes, sir. How much, sir?
Yeah. And Harry's inner dialogue is always like, he knows the Merlin could kill. He respects the power of the Merlin, but he doesn't really appreciate
and I don't
the Merlin's
know that he
attitude.
Like, I don't know in that book that he actually... He thinks that the Merlin's like more trained than him, but at that point, like later in the books, he finds out that the Merlin could actually kick his ass. But at that point, he's like, he's more skilled than I am. But
because kids always think they're smarter than their teachers.
Exactly.
I don't know if this actually goes anywhere, but at least up to the point in Book 4 where I read, they hint at the fact that the Merlin's kind of a puppet.
Yeah. Well, definitely not. Like he doesn't.
At the very least,
Harry doesn't agree with his agenda, and he thinks he's a bit of a figurehead.
Yeah. I mean, The White Council is interesting because it's so easy in things like this for it just to be the White Council and their individual faces are irrelevant. Nah, and he does a decent job of the individual characters are very different, not only in their personalities, like, oh, well, that's Professor Snape and that's Professor Flitwick and they're different, but whatever. They're both just Harry's teeth, you know. Yeah. But their opinions of them are very different. You know, the gatekeeper versus Listenwin versus some of them think he's...
The Asian gal, his name I can't remember.
Yeah, somebody think for sure he's just a psychopathic killer and they should still behead him and they were wrong not to behead him. Yep. Some of them think it was self-defense. Some of them think, you know, he's a good guy. Like, they actually have individual personalities and stances, which is, you know, good, as opposed to just having nine faceless white dudes who are, quote-unquote, the White Council.
Yeah. So, and some of it... So the White Council, you have the seven leaders of it, but then you still have, you know, the 30, 40, 50 members that are still also there. So it's, you know, even more than that, really. But, I mean, it's a huge group.
Yeah, it's the people that are considered full wizards, not apprentices. So Harry counts.
Yeah.
He has a vote, as it were.
Yeah.
Although they, like, one part of it is they're going to take away his councilship.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what he's fighting for in this book.
Yeah.
And so it's a really good book. It's really hard to talk about it too much without just saying it's amazing. And he solves a murder and the fairies, lots of fairies.
Yeah.
Like, gains more allies.
But there's more allies. Yeah, there's a war going on now.
And the scene at the end where, at the very end, all his allies have been stripped away from him, and it's just him versus a fairy queen. And then he opens up his satchel, and toot toot, and all the little tiny fairies come out wielding box cutter knives, like dark iron knives wrapped in plastic orange, and they just cut that bitch up. It's amazing.
I like Toot Toot.
Toot Toot's amazing.
Well, because by this time he's been giving them
General Toot Toot.
He's been giving those fairies like pizza
for a week
for a year. So they fuck like his whole like swarm of them.
His army of fairies.
His army of fairies.
And one of them, Toot Toot has been promoted to General Toot Toot. And he has a lieutenant and a
and he has like a bottle cap helmet that he like ties on and flies the battle with a box cutter.
I do like the little fairies.
It's amazing.
I actually like all the fairies. All the fairies are amazing always.
The characters are fantastic.
Book 4...
Because
it introduced the whole concept of the fairy wars and how there's an ongoing balance.
They're both like... Harry thinks that they must not be that strong because they never do anything but fight each other. And then he finds out in that book that it's like, no, they're the most powerful thing ever. If the other one didn't exist, whichever one did would just destroy and rule what's left of the husk
of the
world.
But they're very balanced.
But they're completely 100%
balanced. They are two Mack trucks in a tug of war. Yeah. Like, if there was only one, it would just barrel over everything. Yes. And that doesn't mean it's weak because it's not moving anywhere. Yeah. It just means the other one's equally strong.
Like, 100%. Yeah. And if ever there is the slightest shift in balance of power, the world just ends.
Yeah.
El Nino.
And yeah, because he's like, if summer wins, it wouldn't be that bad, right? It would just be lots of growth. And Bob says, yeah, if you're a virus, it'd be fantastic. You'll eat everything. Yeah. And he's like, oh, I guess that is bad, huh?
Yeah. one interesting thing that to me about book four is that it's brought up and whatnot, but it isn't about the war with the vampires.
No.
Because book three ends with, hey, fucking war with the vampires. And book four is like, yeah, here's some fairy stuff. Yeah.
I mean, he is,
book five is like, yeah, here's some other stuff.
Well, he does get in the duel in book five.
In the back. I mean, it's happening. It's an element going through it. But what it is what it shows that this wasn't going to be, okay, start a war, and then the next book, war, and then end the war.
Yeah.
What it is that we have a series, and this series is now going to take place in modern Chicago during an ongoing vampire war that's going to take way longer than one or two books.
Yeah, and he talks about how he can't order pizza anymore because his house gets bombed. But that's it. Like, he's not, like, fighting the war. It's just, by the way, I can't order pizza because they'll just send a bomb to my house.
Yeah.
Well, it also makes sense that he wouldn't be heavily involved in the war.
Yeah.
Like, he's not trained, and he's not a fighter wizard.
He's not directly involved, and it's not stopping soon.
Yeah.
So it's this constant thing in the back of the books for, I'm not going to say how many books, but at least four and five.
At least four and five.
Yeah.
Yeah, in book five, he gets... Is there anything else?
I mean, that's book four. I mean, again, it's hard to talk about any details of book four.
We could talk for an hour about book four. Yeah.
We really talked about details of book three, but that's because that party is awesome. Because
the party is awesome. That's where you know you're in forever. I just feel that party is like that. I'm always
there. He died doing the right thing.
Yeah. I love that every once in a while he drives by that cemetery in the future, which I think he does it in 4 or 5.
He goes there
Karen's like, what's that? He's like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, the gravestone's there.
The gravestone's just there waiting for him.
It's part of the gift. Like, they bought him a plot for however long it takes him to die, it's waiting.
Yep. Yeah, he knows where he's buried. So book five, the name of book five?
Death Mask.
Starts off pretty simple. He's like just hanging out, and he gets information that the father of Bianca from book three has challenged him to a duel.
She's not his father. It's Duke Don Palo Ortego. He is the war leader of the Red Vampires.
Not her father. Yeah, he's a war leader. He's like, I'm going to challenge you to a duel. And Harry's like, I don't think that's a good idea. He's like,
I think I lose that duel.
If you win the duel, well, win or lose, this will end the war.
Yeah. If I win, I kill you and the war's over. If you win, you kill me and the war's over. And Harry's like, well, I sure. I can die, I guess.
So that's how it starts. Yep. And then it's like, we'll send someone to talk to you in the details later.
Yep.
Which is another
amazing character.
Book five, Kincaid.
Yes.
Book five, Kincaid.
And Ivy.
Ivy. Kincaid.
I like Ivy.
There's this person called the Archive has all information of all mankind ever put into them.
Yep.
It happens to be like an 8-year-old girl.
At the moment.
Who likes kitties
a lot.
Kitty.
She pets Mister.
She's like, kitty.
Yeah, just like that.
And Kincaid is this badass mercenary motherfucker who's assigned to... You hire Kincaid to do a job, he won't stop till the job's done, and he's just a badass motherfucker killer.
Bronn.
Yes.
Bronn with a machine gun guarding an 8-year-old girl who has all of mankind's knowledge.
All of mankind's knowledge.
He's
like, and bear in mind, he's not always her bodyguard. He's just currently hired to be her bodyguard.
It's not like, it is Bronn.
This
like
is a
Bronn,
contract.
Like, he's being paid.
Yep.
Like, I love Kincaid for the same reason I love Bronn. Those are my favorite characters because they are the most honest people.
They're in it for the money.
They are right there. They're like, this person is paying me X dollars to protect them. I am on contract for 6 more hours. If you want me to kill them in 6 hours in a minute... Talk to me in
Let's
6 hours in a minute.
In 6 hours a minute.
But
Let's
right
talk
now,
money.
Back the fuck off or I will kill you because they are currently paying me.
And Dresden and Kincaid kind of this dialogue back and forth.
I just want to point a quick thing. If somebody has all the knowledge in the world and is still looking at cats, that must mean they're pretty awesome.
Well, she's still a little girl. It's just crazy.
She's a little girl. And like she can
and
also,
knowledge,
like,
and wisdom are two different things.
Yes. She's not very wise.
She is a library in human form.
Correct.
She, you know, she's a library with instant retrieval. That doesn't mean that she would make good decisions, you know. Right.
So one thing with Kincaid is him and Harry get in this conversation, and he's like, who's tougher kind of thing. And Kincaid's like, you know, if I wanted to kill you, you know, I would just, you know, buy a sniper rifle, be like...
No, Harry's like, if you killed me, I would kill you with my death curse. Because they're kind of like getting their dicks out on the table sort of thing.
Because wizards do that. They have a thing where if you kill them, like with their dying move, they just kaboom and you die. Or they put
or
a curse in you.
At any point,
or
they permanently they spend their soul to kill a person.
Correct.
They
will die.
A death curse.
And all that Kincaid does is he's like, well, I mean, you've got that. which is why if I ever kill you, I will be half a state away with a sniper rifle, and by the time you hear the bullet, it will have already gone through your head, and I'll be too far away to see your curse. So have fun with that.
Yeah.
And Harry's like, well, fuck.
So I like so that's guy.
How he's I love Kincaid.
Kincaid's fantastic.
So it starts off pretty simple. Okay, I have to fight this wizard guy for a duel and
vampire dude.
Vampire Duke Court, who's like thousands, you know,
thousands, super, hundreds of thousands of years old.
But he's super old, super powerful. And as soon as he agrees to the duel, people are like, Harry, you're going to die and be their vampire, so they're not going to honor their side of the bargain and see you're an idiot.
Yeah, that is pretty much everyone's agreement.
Yeah.
This is true.
So that's it. And then, of course, I don't remember. And then we get.
Then we meet Brian's favorite character.
Well, no, because that's. First, we meet Daenerys.
Because he goes on the interview.
He goes in and he.
The Larry Fowler show?
The Larry Fowler show. That's book five?
Yeah. That's where him and Duke Paolo chat a little bit.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't even realize the Duke is this dude who he thinks is on a show, and suddenly he turns out he's just like.
He's an expert in vampires who's on the show to talk about vampires are good people. And the counterpoint on the show is Harry. It's a talk show about how are vampires good or bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So that happens. And obviously some of the TV should go crazy because, you know, Harry's like
Harry gets angry
he's
and scared.
He's on the show and like the cameras are just fritzing out and it's great.
Well, they're fine until he gets scared.
Yeah.
Which is as soon as the Duke says anything.
And I think he gets attacked by the snake monster.
He gets attacked. He's leaving and he walks by a homeless guy.
Yeah.
And then he gets attacked.
Yeah. And this guy basically turns like
a bear.
A half bear, half man. Kind of a bear.
With three eyes.
Yeah. Like a bear with three eyes and this weird sigil on his head. And
yep.
Harry escapes him. I forget how much.
The homeless guy kicks its ass.
Yeah. Oh, the homeless guy kicked his ass. I forget who kicked his ass.
Yeah, it's the homeless guy, Shiro. Shiro Yoshimo.
So you get introduced with, because Michael's one of the three Knights of the Cross. You meet the other two Knights of the Cross in this book.
Yep.
Shiro and I always forget his name. The Russian.
Yes, the Russian, sorry. Sonya.
Sonya. So then you realize that this new villain group called the Denarians.
Denarians.
And the Denarians basically each have a silver coin. There's 30 of them. And
they are kind of a
30 pieces of silver. Where have I heard of 30 pieces of silver before?
Personally, my favorite horror genre is like good versus, like devil versus angels.
And that's this one.
I love, for some reason, that's my favorite thing.
Okay, I want to, sorry, this is a brief spoiler. It's a known thing about the Dresden Files that every fifth book is considers these characters. It's not that they don't show up in the other books, but they're the main villains of 5, 10, 15, and eventually the capstone final book is going to be 20.
No,
he's not going to reach 20?
He can go beyond 20. He's going to go beyond. It might go like 2023.
Okay, but at any rate, we know there will be four books that involve
these
guys.
Every fifth book is Denarian focused.
And I will say that every fifth book is probably my favorite book of the five. Like, I love them all. But God, the books with them are so amazing.
So you meet these.
They're
guys.
Always climaxes.
They're
the
always
thing.
Very
you know, like they yeah. I'm almost not. That's almost not a double meeting, Katie. Because I, by the way, I did Google it. Book five is the bondage scene.
Oh, so, it is book five. Okay.
Also, Susan comes back in book five, which is great because she kind of left the book four and pops back in book
five.
Oh,
that's right. Okay, you're right.
So these Denarians are. Oh, because so the Denarians, you have a silver coin, and each of the coins is possessed by a great old demon.
Yeah.
And basically, if you pick up a coin, it says, if you let me into you, I will grant you power and things. And
infinite life and power.
Yeah, you're like, well, that sounds great.
And they're good. They are good at doing this because they don't have to force themselves in.
Yeah.
They aren't just like, if Harry were to pick up one of these, it wouldn't just say, I can make you super powerful, to say, I can help you protect Murphy.
Yeah.
I can help you save these people.
Yeah.
I can help you end the war with the vampires, because they know what you want, and not everybody just wants to be a god.
Correct. They tempt you with what you want.
So they slowly, eventually, they manipulate
and they,
you.
And they have eternity to ensnare you.
Yeah.
They don't,
and that's the thing is, like, if you're really strong, you'll resist this temptation, and you'll, like, they'll say, here's ultimate power. You're welcome. And eventually you'll start using it for evil.
Yeah.
And they're like, cool, thanks, I'm in charge now.
Yeah.
And if it takes a week, great.
Okay, great.
If it takes 50 years,
okay.
If you never give in and you die and then the coin passes on to your kids and your will, okay. Like, they'll get there eventually. They've been around...
Yeah.
Well, for at least 2,000 years.
Yeah.
When the
in
villain,
this version,
yeah.
they've been around for 2,000 years. Who knows how long they've been on before they went into the coins?
Yeah. When your villain you're dealing with have plans that last longer than your lifespan, it's sometimes hard to deal with that on a timetable because they can outlive you.
Because literally, at one point, they tell Harry, they're like, "Look, we could just wait for this plan until you're dead. We're going to try to do it now, and maybe you stop us. And if you do, great, good for you. In 200 years, you'll be dead, and we'll do it anyway. Chew on that."
Yeah. So it's like a mayfly trying to outlast you in a battle of wills. It's like you literally die in 6 hours. I do not care.
So it starts off, they're around. Harry doesn't know exactly what they're up to at first, but he knows the three Knights of the Cross, and they're trying, the Knights of the Cross, the thing is, what's cool about it is they want to turn them, they want to basically, they don't even want to kill them. They want to confront them, convince them of the error of their ways.
Because they want to save the person
that's in there. They want to save the person that's in there. So they try to use faith to break the person, which is kind of, and then one of the Knights of the Cross actually was converted that way.
Yeah, Sonya was previously a Denarian.
So, and Harry gets really frustrated because sometimes they capture one, and Harry's like, we got him here, let's kill him, we're fine. And they're like, well, we can't kill him, he has to...
He's a person.
Because a Denarian starts saying things like, I surrender, let's just talk.
I give up, my bad, you guys were right, my bad, I'm sorry.
And Harry's like, he's lying. And Michael's like, well, I know he's lying, but it doesn't matter. So, and that's when Harry breaks the guy's legs, he's so fucking pissed off.
Yeah. Because, it gets to the point where it's like, we need this information. He said he was sorry. He said that he will do what he has no information, and he's really sorry. I can't not believe him. Like, he's sorry. He turned into a human form.
And the guy's smirking while he's saying it.
And so Michael's like, I'll be in the car.
Yeah. And he leaves Harry alone with a baseball bat and a guy who has kneecaps.
Yeah.
And
Cheryl's had kneecaps.
Yeah. Well, he has kneecaps at the beginning of
the conversation.
Oh, my God. And just Harry, it's one of the most badass moments when Harry's done with him and he doesn't have kneecaps anymore.
And he has his information.
And Harry has information. This guy no longer has kneecaps. Yeah. And Harry just throws a quarter at him and says, there's a payphone across the parking lot. And the best part of that crawling.
Scene, the best part of that scene is he gets in the truck and they're pulling away and they say, well, what did you do with him? He said, I gave him a quarter. And Sonya says, you know, payphones take more than a quarter now, right? And Harry said, I know. Oh my God.
Yeah, so you have the Russian guy, you have Shira, who's this like short old little guy who's like, and they're all obviously massive.
Think Yoda, weaponers. But human.
Yeah.
That's racist.
Oh my God.
But and then
for Shiro, I meant.
At about, I think it, I checked with, I think at about the 70% mark, the because you don't really know what the Denarians, you know they're in town, they're fucking town. Shit up, and you're like, this is annoying. And then also, Dresden's ex-girlfriend Susan comes back into town.
Yep.
She was hanging out in South America because the death of the Red Court's really powerful down
there. Yeah, so she's part of this like resistance.
They're like headquartered now.
She's like part of this guerrilla group that fights the resistance now. Let me see if it's got...
Which is filled by a bunch of half...
vampires that fight the Red Court. That's what they do.
And he has sex with her in this book. It's
She's weird. A member of the Fellowship. That's what they're called. The Fellowship. Who are like just this guerrilla rogue organization that what they do is fight the Red Court vampires.
Because in South America, this Red Court is really in control and people are slain. It's really
bad. Their lives are terrible, yeah.
That's where they originated from because... I can't remember if it's cart before the horse, but the whole Aztec, like the pyramids and stuff like that, are Red Court related because the whole blood sacrifices and stuff like
is
that.
Their thing, yeah. So that's all cool. And she's in town trying to find the Shroud of Turin, which has been stolen from wherever the Shroud of Turin normally lives.
Because it can cure anything.
It can cure anything.
And by anything, we mean anything.
Anything.
Like and being a half vampire. Like
being a half vampire.
And, which gets Harry more intrigued. And then at some point, Mark Cohen says, you know, I want that item too.
Well, see, Mark Cohen's has bid on it and purchased it.
Yeah, so Mark
It's just being delivered to him.
Yeah, so Mark Cohen's looking for it. Then you find
his
out,
assistant. Yeah. Oh my God, what's her name?
You have Mark Cohen trying to get the Shroud. Then you find out the Denarians are after the Shroud. You have the whole duel going on. The whole duel being prepped up. And then
it doesn't list what's her name, unfortunately. Yeah,
basically, Mark Cohen is very interested in the... Because Mark Cohen realizes there's a whole, you know, fantasy world that
going
exists.
On.
So he hires someone, and he hires basically a magical consultant.
The job he tried to hire Harry for.
Yeah, because he wanted Harry for this job, and Harry's like, I can't work for you because I have morals. Well, he found someone without morals who will help him and explain to him the whole magic world.
Who's pretty good with magic.
So not only is Mark Cohen the kingpin of New York, or Chicago, I mean, he's also learning all sorts of things. He's learning all about the Accords, and he's trying these, you know, because that's what he's getting into.
Because it's power. It's another way of having power.
So lots of shit happened. I'm not going to spoil too many things because, you know, it's too many cool things.
There's too many cool things to happen.
But towards the end of the book, basically, you have Harry, you have Mark Cohen working checking, with Harry.
Sorry. I was just checking when we found out something, and we don't find it out until book 12. And I was reading, apparently Wikipedia has each of the books, they have a section that is major changes in Harry's life in this book, which is a nice thing to have summarized for each book. Book 12 changes. I just read the list of things. Yeah. I'm like, holy fuck, Book 12.
Yep. Every book is a two-name title. Book 12 is called Changes, and it seriously earns its name.
Yeah, yeah. That is.
It's not 11. I thought 11 was Changes.
It says it's Book 12.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yep.
70% into the book, yep. You finally meet Nicodemus, the leader of the Denarians. Now, he's the first person who, when given a coin, is a true partner with
his coin. Like, you don't need to corrupt me. Let's just do this thing. Let's get it done.
So him and his demon are truly partners, 100%, in their goal to basically... He wants to fix the world.
He doesn't want to fix the world.
The world is messed up. Nicodemus wants to fix it. And him and Harry even have conversations.
Yeah.
Usually when Harry's a captive. He's like, you know, you and me want the same goals. I'm just willing to kill 500 million people to accomplish it.
If I kill half the world to completely give the rest of the world peace, how does that make me a bad person?
He's like, Harry, you know as well as I do there's some mysterious force in the background fucking shit up. I don't like it. You don't like it. Let me kill 1 billion people, and I'm pretty sure they're going to be part of the billion. You just sit back.
By the way, would you like a coin?
Yeah, would you like a coin? And Harry's
just help me out. I'll give you a coin. No questions asked. Just...
Yeah.
You walk away, I walk away.
We will get all these bad guys.
It'll be fine. We got to take care of this problem.
And Harry does, for some weird reason, Harry's like, no, I don't want to help you kill 1 billion people. What a coward.
Which is weird.
What a wimp. Katie is right. Dresden's a moron.
It solves hunger. It solves...
Overpopulation.
It's overpopulation. It solves so many problems.
It does.
Nicodemus doesn't want to like rule the world. He doesn't want to become a king of the world. He just wants to solve problems. He wants to make the world a better placer. Too many people, he's removing the people part of it.
Yeah.
So he wants the Shroud to basically unleash a plague that'll like wipe out mankind. Most of mankind.
No, it's not even... He even mentions it. He's like, this will wipe out like a 600-mile radius. Like, in the grand scheme of things, how bad is that really?
Yeah.
Like, it's not especially, even like all of North America.
He's just going to wipe out like Illinois? He's totally the good guy. Won me over.
Okay, yeah, you're right. He's my hero.
So maybe
Detroit and Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fine.
Illinois and Detroit? Madison's like, where's the bad part of this getting wiped out?
Right? Like, it could be all right.
So Harry's like, no. So at the end, he's like, you know what? I need help to fight this guy because he has the Knights of the Cross. Only two of them are helping him because something bad happens
to the third one.
Third one's busy.
He is busy.
He's taking a break.
Taking a nap.
But
what happens to the third one? What am I missing?
Dead.
Well, no, he's not dead. Harry gets captured. And Harry's being tempted by Nicodemus, and Nicodemus is having breakfast while Harry's drowning under a waterfall. And this is going on and going on and going on. And Harry's like, no, I'm not interested. And then there's a knock on the door, and one of the Knights of the Sword is there, and he's like, dude, how about you let Harry go? And Nicodemus is like, how about I don't? He's like, how about you do? How about I don't? How about I'll take Harry's place? No takesies, backsies? Harry's like, no, don't do that.
Harry is basically beaten. He can't even talk. He's like.
He starts to talk and they like punch him or stick a dagger in him. Because
he obviously doesn't want this tree because it's awful. But he's so beaten up he has no ability.
And then the guy's like, sure, let's do that. And then Harry's like crawling out of the sewers.
Well, he got him and the sword.
Yeah, him and the sword. And so like Harry's like crawling out of the sewers listening to them beat the ever-loving shit out of the Knight of the Sword behind him.
And the big showdown is near the airport. And when they walk into the airport, like, church...
Oh, man, the airport
chapel. It's just filled with, like, body parts of that, like... Of that Knight of
the Sword.
Because they like, basically torched
totally death. Defiled. And then he walks up to where the cross would be, and the guy's still alive. Yeah.
Not for long, mind you. But it's a really... So yeah, Harry gets pretty pissed off.
So they're the good guys, you said. Yeah.
They're the good... Yeah.
They have faults.
You got to break some eggs to make an omelet. Perfect.
Nicodemus is the hero.
Nicodemus is all about breaking eggs.
You have to torture a few eggs into shards to make an omelet.
You were just applauding Harry for breaking someone's kneecap and leaving him less money than it takes for a payphone.
Yeah, but that guy was a jerk.
Across the parking lot.
That guy was a jerk.
So, hey, you don't know that this Knight Templar wasn't a jerk.
We don't know that the holy man wielding a sword of God wasn't a jerk.
You don't know that.
So you're really I have a bit of evidence in the fact that he's a holy man wielding a sword of God.
So you get to the end. The spell that released the power of the Shroud turns activated. You realize that the bad guys are in the hotel.
Harry could feel himself having all the viruses ever. Yeah.
So you know they're on a train.
Yep.
He's like, "Hey, Marco, I need help." So as they go on the plane, drop off, they're playing Flight of the Valkyries.
Yes.
Over the PA
of the helicopter.
Which happens twice in the series, which you think the second time would be cheesy, but it's amazing.
So good both times.
Because even Harry's like, because he makes a request for it to play. I can't think of an artist suddenly that wrote that. But it's just such a ridiculous...
And then him and Marcone and the other two Knights of the Sword that are still around rappel out of a helicopter with that playing over the PA.
Yeah. Is it... I can't think of it. No, it's not We Will Rock You. It's, yeah,
it's
shit.
Also, that's well, it's, I mean, it's Fly of the Valkyries, but I forget the name of the artist that writes.
Yeah, and they did it in the Wagner. One War movie. I mean,
Wagner, Wagner. Yeah, because Marcone calls the front. He's like, can we get a little Wagner back here or something like that?
And she does it. And he's like, she's the greatest person in the world. I can't even remember the movie that that's from.
Which is Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, Apocalypse Now. I mean, my brain is...
She, I love her. Like,
her
she,
character's amazing.
She's...
well, it's hilarious. Yeah. There's a lot of, yeah, exactly.
There's so many reasons her character's amazing, but yes.
So they get this big mega fight, and then, you know, Nicodemus gets defeated but not destroyed. He actually escapes out. Obviously, they don't, the virus gets stopped.
The virus gets stopped. They get the Shroud of Turin back.
So basically,
Marcone gets the Shroud of Turin, I should say.
The deal was two things. One, he has to get... Because you find out that... Marcone accidentally hurt a child in his takeover, and he feels guilt over it. So he's trying to find a way. The kid's been in a coma for
years, like a decade.
And Dresden, like,
and that's what his. So remember when Dresden first? This is news to Katie. Katie first when Dresden first soul gazes Marcone, he sees there's this thing in the background that's driving Marcone, but he doesn't know what it is. It's this girl that almost died, who, by the way, is the same girl whose parents were sex slaves in book one to make the murder juice that made people see things. It's like all coming together,
and it keeps pissing off Dresden because it's like, I want to hate this motherfucker, but he's trying to save. You know,
he's trying to save a girl.
Good things occasionally, and even though he's a bad guy.
So the deal is, he gets the Shroud of Turin for 3 days because it took Jesus 3 days to rise. He gets to put the Shroud of Turin on the girl for 3 days and see if it makes her better.
If it doesn't work,
he has to give it back. Then,
so he goes. Well, either way, he's giving it back.
Yeah. Yes, either way, he's giving it back. But
so then after all that, he has to go and actually have the fucking duel. I think they have it in a fucking stadium.
You have it in the stadium.
Yeah, they have it in like Cubs Stadium, Wrigley Field.
Yeah. So they're going to duel. It's like, I think it was...
The duel of the mind, because Harry got to pick the weapon, and it was mind or, like, any weapon he wanted, and he picked mind, because he thought it was the only thing he might have a chance at. And so they literally battled with their will.
Well, they put this item in the middle of the field. Necrotite. And if it touches you, it basically absorbs everything. It's like this death.
It's a black hole. It's death. It is death. That's what it is.
If this rock touches you, you die. It's put in the middle. They use their will to push
it. They think it towards each other.
If it touches one, you lose.
Yes.
So they get in this will, and they're both. And obviously Harry's like, it's like the whole like, you know, you're getting behind. It's the rock. You're getting behind.
He's tired.
He needs to over the top this thing to win because it's getting pushed against like the will of the bear. Is like, oh my God, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's just happening. He realizes that there's people in the background that are like about to jump him.
Kill him.
You just see vampires coming everywhere. Up out of the... because it's focused entirely on this, so he can't defend himself.
Yep.
Yeah. And then obviously people start attacking each other constantly because people that Susan are with are attacking the vampires. And then Kincaid gets like really pissed off if people are trying to fight.
Kincaid.
Yeah.
Kincaid. He's got an entire sports bag full of shotguns. And he just fires them twice and then throws them. And then
it's
fires
faster to grab another one than to
grab
reload.
Another one. Yeah.
So the Duke ends up getting away.
He gets away from the duel.
There's a big climactic fight, but neither of them dies. Die. So
The deal has not been.
Neither of them dies, so the war does not end.
Correct.
And then because there's a thing like when he was with Ebenezer growing, because Ebenezer trained him, and when they would always like, because in the book Ebenezer sends a letter saying, "Hey, look in the sky.
Look in the sky." They have this way to talk to each other through magic.
Yeah.
And so he sends him this magic message. He's like, "Hey, look in the sky." And then a Russian fucking satellite falls on the entire place where the Duke lives.
It falls on the Duke's house. Yeah. A Duke satellite falls on his house.
His entire compound just ceases to exist.
Because Ebenezer used magic to drop it.
Because Ebenezer dropped a satellite on it.
Because Ebenezer's awesome.
Ebenezer's amazing.
Yeah.
More of that later.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Something I was Googling, so this is technically something in book five, although it doesn't even have details. I kept being annoyed because apparently I'm racist. His girlfriend's name is Rodriguez.
Right.
The guy I think is awesome is Ramirez. That's why I kept mixing up their last name. Okay. Carlos Ramirez. And according to this, he technically first appears in book five.
Oh.
But he's properly introduced in a later book. But Ramirez is the best, and I love
him. I know we can't talk about book six, but we'll introduce another amazing character called Butters.
Yes, Butters.
I'm just saying we can't talk more about him. He's not here, but yeah. So
book six is going to be pretty exciting.
Is book six Deadbeats?
Book six Deadbeats.
Oh, okay. All right.
When I think back, every book, you know, they're all good.
They're all amazing. So, yeah. Except maybe Ghost Story.
Fuck you!
The book, my least favorite, I think my 8 or 9 to me is the least favorite, and I still think it's fine.
Yeah. Oh, I still love Ghost Story, but it's my least favorite.
Oh my god!
Even when I read 15, the latest book, I'm like, my god, this might be my favorite book. There's so many moments.
There's so many moments. Oh, god.
He doesn't slow down. Oh, 15. But yeah, I mean, so Harry survives. So there's still a war going on.
Still a war going on.
But it's escalation.
I mean, the series was the very end of book 5.
When the satellite falls on the guy's house?
No.
That's a later book. Nicodemus, yes.
Oh, yes, yes.
Nicodemus flees.
Yep. Harry takes possession of the third sword. The guy that they find in the chapel that's almost dead, what he tells Harry
Michael's wife has had a baby, and they named it Harry after Harry.
After Harry.
It happened in book 3, didn't it?
Technically.
True, but that's worth noting for the end of this.
Yes. So he says, hey, my sword, you guys will get it back. I have faith in you. When you do, Harry, you keep it, and when you find someone to give it to, I trust you to give it to the right person.
Yeah.
That was like his death wish.
That's what that noise was?
And so when they fight on the train, when he fights Nicodemus, Nicodemus gets away, but Harry gets the sword from him in the battle.
Sure.
And so Harry has a sword that he keeps in his umbrella rack at his house.
Yeah. Yep.
So he beats the Duke. He goes to Michael's house to have like a cookout to chill out because, you know, it's their celebration. We all didn't die.
We win. Hooray.
And he's outside.
With Harry.
And suddenly he looks, something's flipped
up. Somebody drives by in a car.
Someone drives by in a car and suddenly right in front of the kid, someone throws something, which Harry grabs before the kid gets to it. Happens to be a silver coin. You're like, dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
So, yeah.
And so Harry immediately puts it in a cloth in his pocket, goes home, digs up about 30 feet of his basement, builds a magical chest with magical spells, buries it, puts more spells on it, and says, I'm glad that wasn't too bad. I'm sure nothing bad will happen.
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah.
The books escalate constantly. Yep. It ratchets over and over. The stakes get higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. And so that's an interesting, like, eventually he stops really, you talked about this with book 4 has a murder mystery and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, the stakes get high enough to a point where he doesn't have time to be a detective.
Right.
Really doesn't happen hardcore because it's almost 12. But it does happen.
Yeah, yes. It does.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's definitely post 10.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, it's kind of nebulous, but if you imagine that there's X number of books. Actually, I'm not even going to use numbers, but the point is the series kind of has three phases.
Yep.
And phase one is Detective Harry Dresden has adventures and there's this world around him.
Mm-hmm.
Phase two is the shit is real. We are now in full plot mode.
Yep.
And then phase three is going to be end times, like resolving, cycle. You know? Yeah. And so when you think about, like, we all watch Buffy because Buffy the Vampire Slayer was a great show. So you think about the seasons have that where you have the introduction, you have one-offs and one-offs and one-offs for the first few episodes. And there'll be 5 minutes per episode where you'll see some dude in a
Uber
cave.
Bad. Yeah.
He's like, I'm sure planning stuff and good for him.
That's nice.
And then like episodes, you know, 7 through 12, they find out about Uber Bad and he comes to the forefront and everything. And then the last 5 or 6 episodes is them fighting Uber Bad. And Dresden has talked about how the whole series of Dresden, Butcher has talked about how a series of Dresden is doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so books through 10-ish, 12-ish, some number.
Somewhere in there.
Are building. Like, that's how big this mythos is that this is all building. It's not even into coasting mode.
Yeah.
You know, and so even now into book 15 or whatever, we're still in the
middle. Yeah.
Yeah.
My mind is exploding with the possibilities of what the end's going to be like. Holy crap.
Yeah.
So anyway, we hope you guys enjoyed listening to us rant about a book series we love.
And if in future book series, I mean, I guess we tried, other than a few moments of the books that we liked a lot, we didn't really focus on details because, you know, I think that was really the point of it.
And if there's something that we did do or didn't do that you did or didn't like, let us know. We'll try to adjust when we do 6 through 10.
I mean, we could hypothetically, if we wanted to, and we didn't do this one, but if the listeners wanted it to almost be... Let me try this again. It could be 100% full spoilers.
Yes, it could.
We could blow by blow ruin everything with the assumption that before you listen to the next episode, you will have read through book 10.
Yeah. Right.
Which might be the way to do it, because then we can just full on say things.
Well, we've been pretty spoilers on what we did, but
we're spoilery.
We took a few things out.
We did a few things out, but...
Katie disagrees.
Well, we didn't mention the summer lady getting killed.
Oh, but now we did.
You know, that was something we left
out. Oh, we did that before.
Yeah, we mentioned that it was the murder of the summer. Yeah, no, we didn't talk about how the summer lady was killed, and so then his friends became the new summer lady and summer night, so now they're his allies. Yeah. We had left that out.
But now we haven't, so yeah. We got that going for us.
There's all sorts of limits. There's millions of little things. We kept the light out. But yeah, no, it's a good.
We enjoy Dresden. We love it. We love to talk about it. If you enjoy hearing us gush about Dresden, hooray!
I don't even care if anybody more. Listened. I like talking.
Me neither.
It is. Yeah, no, it's just fun to.
I need to go home and immediately read 6 through 10 now.
Yeah, no, and it's because you meet more factions, and one of them spends a lot of time with porn.
Yes.
One of the
books in 6 through 10 is almost entirely porn based.
Yeah. It's a murder mystery at a porn shoot.
Yep. And one that takes place in a convention, a horror themed convention.
The same book.
Yeah.
Same book.
Isn't it? No. No. One's the murder. No, that's different books.
The horror themed convention to me had the weirdest ending.
The porn book has my favorite Ramirez moment.
Yes. It's different. Yeah, there's definitely different books.
Okay.
They are different books.
Yeah, because the climax.
He can't be at a horror convention and at a porno shoot.
I mean, he could be.
No.
I'm trying to remember which one
it
of the
depends
is.
What kind of porno it is.
They're two different places.
They're linked a little bit. There's a little link to them, but one ends in a museum, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some great awesomeness. We start getting more polka. In the books.
We do definitely get a 100% more polka starting in book 6.
There is far, far more polka. Far, far more Ramirez.
I don't know who Ramirez is. I think he started playing D&D end of...
Carlos Ramirez. It's Warden Buddy.
Oh, the Warden dude.
Warden
okay,
Ramirez.
Yeah. All right, Warden Ramirez.
Oh,
cool.
It hurts. It hurts to Warden be Ramirez. This good.
Warden Ramirez.
So we love Dresden. We hope you love Dresden.
Fuck it. Let's talk about 6 through 10 now.
I haven't reread them.
Okay.
I'll go somewhere, Andy.
Fine.
All right. Let's roll.
Thanks for listening. Bye.